Ready for your new TV obsession? Thursday, January 26th on the CW, the network that gave you The Vampire Diaries and Gossip Girl, is bringing you the awesomely dark and addictive new series Riverdale. Based on Archie comics, Riverdale puts a super edgy, twisted spin on the classic characters you know. Did you ever read Archie? Which character are you? Are you a good girl like Betty, or are you more of a Veronica? Are you like Golden Boy Archie, or are you a misunderstood loner like Jughead? That's where I really see myself, as a misunderstood loner like Jughead. Which character are you secretly crushing on? Now, Riverdale may look like the perfect, safe, wholesome small town, but it's got huge secrets. It all starts off with a new year at Riverdale High and the mysterious murder of one of its most popular kids. Everyone becomes a suspect, and that's when the sordid details about what everyone really did over the summer and with whom begin to surface. You won't believe what the people in this town are hiding. So do not miss the jaw-dropping series premiere of the must-see new show Riverdale, Thursday, January 26th, only on the CW. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here with a very special guest in the studio with me to talk about his game in the Millennials versus Gen X. Please welcome, for the first time here on the podcast proper, David Wright. David, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me in here. This is insane. I've been such a fan of your podcast for years, and to actually be inside the studios, I can't believe it.
David, you're right! David, you're right!
Yes, okay. That's for you. That's for you. Not for David Bloomberg. That's right. For you. So, all right. So, thank you so much for coming on in. I know we've been trying to get this going for a couple of weeks. You're back in town, and this is I'm really, really thrilled that you're here to talk about this stuff. So how's everything been going since the finale?
Things are going great since the finale. I was really nervous about what to expect after, you know, the finale aired and it was all over. And I thought it'd be really sad. And instead, I just felt just a tremendous sense of relief that, you know, I'd made it through relatively unscathed. And I'm just completely happy with the experience.
What did you think was going to be sad, that you weren't on TV anymore?
It's not about not being on TV anymore, but like, you know, I would get really nervous before the show would air each week, but there was also an excitement and like, oh, what's going to get shown? You know, you remember what happened and will they show this? Will they not show that? And for that to just suddenly go away overnight, like I didn't know if I'd just be really sad. And also, you know, just the relationships that I have with these people, there's obviously less of a reason to reach out to them once the show stops airing.
Yes. And has that happened? Have things died down with this cast?
There's been a little bit of that. But for the most part, I'm really happy with the relationships I've been able to maintain and the friendships. And some of them, you know, they live out here in LA and it makes it a lot easier. So it's been good.
Yeah, it's a little bit like going to camp. It's like you're with these people the whole time, and then you get back from camp, and it's like, we're going to be best friends forever. We're all going to talk every single day. And then you do start to drift, but, you know, you still have the time that you spent together. You'll always still have Paris, you know?
Absolutely, yes. We'll always have Fiji.
You'll always have Fiji. All right, so I'm really pumped to have you here to go through all of this stuff. And so the last couple of weeks, then, what's that been like?
Last couple of weeks have been good. We, you know, right after the reunion, we went to Vegas. Adam put a bunch of us, 15 of the cast, up in a hotel in Vegas. And
only 15?
Yeah, you know, well, I mean, like, you know, Paul, he's like, don't you people have jobs?
Paul, I figured he would be the first person there.
Yeah, no, he had to go back to Florida and get back to work.
Okay.
You know, Will, obviously, he's 18, so Vegas isn't going to be that much fun for him. But it was nice. It was a lot of fun.
Who's the other person that's left out?
Who else was not there? I can't remember everyone now who wasn't there. There was a lot of drinking involved.
Okay. All right, we'll figure it out. Was it Lucy?
Lucy was there. She actually had her child was competing in some event there in Vegas, and she hung out with us for that one night.
Okay, so 15 survivors in Vegas. How many rooms is that?
Might have even been 16, actually. I think there was about 8 to 10 rooms somewhere in there.
8 to 10 rooms. Okay, yeah. So looks fun. Sounds like a fun trip.
So much fun.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, nothing that there's no secrets at all. Really, there's nothing like that.
And did you guys all, like, at nighttime, like, go out as a group? Because that's a big group of people to be herding around.
Yeah, you know, we went to this club, all of us, and I nearly got kicked out, which I don't even understand. Like, I wasn't doing anything. This club had a lot of rules. Like, one of them was you're not allowed to have any fun. and Jay almost got kicked out.
That's all of the clubs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, especially in Vegas. Lots of rules. And water was, like, $15. But yeah, it was just fun seeing everybody.
Okay. Are you a big club guy?
I'm not. I'm really not. I kind of hung out in the back on this bench with Sunday, who's also obviously not a very, she's not into clubs. But yeah, you know, it was really about just seeing everybody and having fun.
Yeah, so we'll get into Survivor. We're going to get there. But I would just love to get a little bit of your life, you know, just a couple of minutes before Survivor, because I think that people just probably would just word association, Family Guy, David Wright, and I don't know if they have a good idea of what your actual background is in terms of your career. Can you just talk about like a little bit of your journey of like how did you end up in Los Angeles and writing for TV?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been interested in writing since I was a kid. And then when I got into high school, I got to write just a sample Cheers spec. And then I'm like, oh, this is what I want to do. I want to write for TV. So then I went to Syracuse University, studied it. And yeah, moved out here in 96. And the first gig I got was a PA position on Mad About You, which I think really dates me. You know,
wow.
I might as well say like Andy Griffith or something. but yeah, and then kind of I said it in the show. I was an assistant.
And what did you do on Mad About You?
I was a production assistant. That's basically you're just getting lunches and coffee for people. And I was a production assistant in the writer's room. So I got to like see how the sausage gets made. And then from there, I became a writer's assistant on the same show. And that's, you know, you're sitting at the computer making the changes that the writers want you to make.
An underrated show, Mad About You?
I think so. I loved Mad About You. I loved watching it. I loved my time there. I don't know that people revisit it much, but I loved it.
Yeah. And so then from Mad About You, then what do you go on to do?
Then from there, I went to Suddenly Susan. I was there for the last season of that.
Yeah.
Brooke Shields. And that was just a trip. I had a childhood crush on her. Mm-hmm. And then from there, Malcolm in the Middle. And I was there for 6 or 7 years till that ended. And
you were there for the whole run?
Yeah. I came in at like the tail end of season one.
Okay.
And then I got to write a couple episodes of that. That was, you know, that was amazing. That's why I moved out here. And from there, Notes from the Underbelly. And then I ended up on eventually Family Guy as a writer's assistant there. But then I left to get my first writing position on this show called Super Ninjas for Nickelodeon. And then Family Guy called and said, hey, do you guys want to come back as writers? And me and my writing partner went back there and we were there for a couple of years. And now where I'm at, we just sold a animated pilot to TBS with Rhys Darby from Flight of the Conchords. He played Murray. And we're hopefully going to find out in 3 or 4 months whether or not that gets picked up for series.
All right. Well, that's great. Congratulations. Keep your fingers crossed on that. So in the whole time as you're working in scripted, at what point did you start to really get into Survivor?
It's funny. So my writing partner at the time, he was my roommate. I hadn't seen a single episode of Survivor, not even the first season, until 2010.
Yeah.
And I was just walking through, you know, the TV room and he was watching and it was Heroes versus Villains. And I just saw like a second of it. And I sat down like, okay, I was instantly hooked. I'm like, oh, so this is what Survivor is. And I went out and I got season one and just worked my way up and it became an addiction. And I found your podcast. And then I'm like, well, now I really want to play this game.
So your partner that was really into Survivor, that's still who you work with now?
That's right. Okay. Yeah.
And then what was his reaction to you not only going to Survivor, but also becoming such a big figure in this past season?
You know, it's funny. He actually discouraged me from even applying because he was like, you know, they already had a Cochran. They're not going to do another Cochran. And I'm like, well, yeah, maybe you're right. But I pressed on and he was there with me when I got the call that he was there with me when I got the call initially after sending in my video. And he was there with me when I got the call saying that I was going to be on it. And maybe that just means I hang out with him too much. Mm-hmm. But
and was he like, I made you?
No, he was really happy for me. I was worried because, you know, me going out there because we are writing partners, it actually does affect his career and his life more than just, oh, your friend's on Survivor. Mm-hmm. But no, he was so super, super supportive and helpful. In fact, he wrote the first draft of our pilot that we sold to TBS while I was on the island.
Now, the idea of having a writing partner in your work, was that a relationship that you tried to replicate when you were out there on Survivor, like with Ken or anybody in particular?
Oh, God. I mean, I wish I really, because of Ken, he's truly the only person that I trusted 100%. And yeah, I definitely trust my writing partner that much. But I just got so paranoid so early on that it became less about whatever my strategy was going in and more about like, oh my God, I am just blowing up my game from day one. And so I was really fortunate to meet Ken.
So we know once the game started that you had all this anxiety, but what was it like for you in sort of like the preparation from when you get the call, hey, you're going to be on Survivor? Are you just riddled with anxiety from that point and then we ultimately see you on the beach and it's just a continuation of that? Or does it start to only hit you once you're there?
No, I was riddled with anxiety from the first phone call that when the casting said, hey, we just watched your video. That's when my anxiety really started to get even worse. And what I did was I'm like, well, here's what I got to do. You know, I got to rewatch every single season again and just take notes and I'm going to recreate Survivor puzzles and memorize all their solutions. And we saw how well my puzzle, how good my puzzle skills are. But all I thought about was Survivor and I listened. I was already listening to your podcast, but then I was re-listening to Evolution of Strategy and just trying to just get all this information just stuck in my head so that I could go out there and just be the best Survivor player ever. And of course, because of the anxiety, all that just disappears. All the information that you have in your head goes away and it just becomes about that raw emotion and you just do so many stupid things.
I also think that you can get too much information in your head. Like, it's certainly fun to go through all this stuff and to talk about it, and God knows I make a career out of it. But I think that probably, you know, maybe just, the minimum of what you need, I think, is probably enough to get by. Like, I don't know how to quantify exactly that, but I think that having all the facts and every single move that was ever made, I don't know if that Rolodex is super helpful in Survivor.
I agree. And, you know, my niece actually boiled down Survivor to 61 rules. And I read those every night. Pregame in my tent.
Where's the ebook?
I know. We should release it.
Publish it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, they were really helpful. It's all the rules that you already know and all your listeners already know. But one of them, of course, was find at least one person you can trust. And I was so happy to find that in Ken.
Yeah. Okay. So when you get out there on the beach, you know, you have a very big first episode in terms of that you are really freaking out. I know I have some of these clips.
Oh, good.
There's this moment when you're going up to Brett and to Chris.
Dude, I like you. I trust you. I hope you trust me. If I hear your name come up, I'm gonna tell you.
Cool.
Chris. I trust you. Okay? I trust you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found that's the most important thing you can do. You should, if you play Survivor, anybody listening, run up to everyone in the game, get right in their face and shout, I trust you, at them.
Do you want to be in my trust cluster?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So were you just like so paranoid that you were going to be the person voted out that you felt like if I just, shore up bonds with every single person there, then I will be in the good graces?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I mean, I think... You know, what I didn't appreciate, and I really should have, is obviously, so yeah, I had watched all the Survivor, and of course, the pace of the show is much different than the pace of the game, and so I was just playing so hard, and there's so many thoughts swimming in my head from the second we hit the beach that, if I had just taken a breath and relaxed a little and worked on just establishing relationships and forming bonds with people, that would have been much better than, yeah, just shouting, I trust you, at them and then running off into the woods looking for idols and accusing people of having idols. And yeah, just complete rookie. I was a rookie. And it showed certainly in the beginning.
So the tribes were broken up, of course, millennials versus Gen X. Now, was this something that you felt coming as you were headed to the beach or this particular division?
I was really happy that I had figured out the theme before we even got to Fiji. And I even bought a book, Not Everybody Gets a Trophy. I'm like, 'cause I wanted to learn about who these millennials are and maybe I can use that. I wanted to have as much information as I could to lower my anxiety. And I was really happy when Jeff said it's millennials versus Gen X. I'm like, oh, cool. I already knew that.
But you already knew it. But did you feel like that you were better off with people that were your own age or people that were younger than you? Because I feel like that you, just as a person, I feel like that you seem younger than you are. And I hope that's coming off as a compliment.
Oh, no, I take it as a compliment. No, I think really what it is I think I'm just not as mature as I should be for a 42-year-old, be it emotionally and physically.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely, I was able to really relate to the millennials like Hannah and Zeke and these people in their 20s that are, so much younger than I am. But I think that, yeah, because I am so emotionally immature, I could connect with them better.
Yeah. And so then once you're out there with the Gen X people, do you feel like that this is a bad group for you in particular? And is that making you more paranoid, or you were just going to be that anxious no matter who you were with?
Yeah. I mean, I would have been anxious no matter who I'm with. But that group of people, I was just surrounded by everybody, not the women, obviously, but the men seemed like men. And I just don't feel like a man. I felt just kind of like a 42-year-old boy. And so, yeah, being around guys like Paul and Chris and Brett and Ken, and I just felt like, why am I here? I contribute nothing to this tribe. I'm not fishing. I'm not providing. All I do is just make everyone really uncomfortable.
Yeah. But ultimately, you're not the person that gets voted out first. So what do you attribute that to? Was there a lot that we didn't get to see in that episode of the things that you were doing to put people at ease?
I mean, part of it is I don't think, because I'm just so physically weak, I don't think people really see me as a threat at all. And I think that I did wear all my fears and anxieties on my sleeve. And I think that actually helped me endear myself to people. And so I think they liked me. And so as paranoid as I got, I think they felt like they could manage me.
So when you guys are going to make that first vote on what to do, your name is being kicked around. Were you confident that you weren't going to be the first person voted out?
I was sure I was going to be the first person voted out. I tore up that beach looking for the hidden immunity idol. I looked under every rock and I did it in front of people because I got really paranoid when I woke up in the shelter and Chris and Paul were having a very quiet conversation above me. And then they went off and they walked off and I thought, oh, they're talking about me. They're talking about me. They weren't, but I thought they were. And so that's when the paranoia really kicked in and I just started just scrambling and just tearing that island apart.
Now, you had a conversation with Jessica back in that first episode also where you're like trying to make a deal with her and she has the legacy advantage at that point. Did you have any sort of inkling that she had something to potentially barter?
I had no idea that she had that advantage. No. I look back at that scene. I was just so scared and I thought my survivor dream was going to end in 3 or 4 days. But no, I had no idea that she had what she had. Not at that point, by the way.
Also, back in the premiere, that was when you guys had the big hurricane, which came through. Was it hurricane or one of these typhoon?
Cyclone.
Cyclone.
Yeah, actually, the first night, I guess the beginnings of the storm were hitting us. And if I was ever going to quit the game, it would have been that first night. I mean, Chris's head is in my lap. I just met him 6 hours before.
Wow.
Yeah. And, but it wasn't even weird at all because we were all just freezing. We were soaked. Our shelter was leaking.
Yeah.
And we were all just trying to stay warm. And I've never felt anything like that in my life. And I think that's part of what also increased the anxiety that I had because, I didn't get any sleep that night. I was freezing. And then also just the shock of like, oh my God, I'm on Survivor right now. And yeah, so then the next day we got evacuated and it was really terrifying.
I couldn't imagine a worse scenario to be in where my first night in Survivor of the Amazon, it was a clear night. It didn't rain and I was just petrified of like I only just passed out from exhaustion. I mean, we were sleeping on the ground in the middle of a jungle And I was just like, you know, petrified of like, what's going to happen? Am I going to die? Are there going to be, you know, things crawling on me? And then just to have never even gotten through one night yet out there and have all of these fears about what is this going to be like? Am I going to die out there? And then to have no shelter and then have this torrential rainstorm. And I think the thing that never comes through for Survivor is how bad it is when it's raining and when it's wet and to be in this terrible storm. I just don't think that that can translate to the viewer at home, like how scary that must have been.
It really can. And yeah, you just take for granted, you know, being able to get into your car or run into your house and turn the heat on or put on extra clothes. And yeah, you're just stuck there. There's nothing you can do. And so like seconds really pass by like hours. And when we did get put on the boats and evacuated, I mean, the wind was like whipping and the ocean was just insane. And I thought, I'm going to die because I wanted to play Survivor. This is so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I really, and then, nobody tells you where you're going. They say they're going to take you to another island and wait out the storm. But like, I'm like, what island? I don't see one. Where are we going?
Right. And it's not exactly like you get to ask that many questions. Like, excuse me, can I ask some questions about like, what's going to happen now? Like, where are we going? Yeah. Like, how long is it going to be until we get there?
Oh, they don't even tell you what time of day it is. Yeah. You don't know anything.
Yeah. So, how much time ultimately passes between when you guys are evacuated and when you come back? It's like 12 hours?
It was something like 12 hours, yeah. And that actually really helped me because I was so paranoid at that point that pause in the game gave me a chance to just kind of calm down and relax and like, okay, just get a hold of yourself. So yeah, it was about 12 hours and then we got back in the boats, went back to the beach and the game resumed.
So you guys have the first immunity challenge, and this is one of those things where there's like, okay, you can do this or you can do that. And you are in a pretty key position of being on the puzzle. And ultimately, you know, you're the puzzle guy. And then you guys lost the challenge and you couldn't get the puzzle together. I mean, what was that like to sort of deal with everybody? Were people angry with you of sort of that you said you could do a puzzle, or was it more of an internal thing?
No one told me that they were angry with me. I assumed that they were. And that's one of another reason why I thought for sure I was going home. I would be annoyed with me. I mean, I sold myself as the puzzle solving guy. And then you saw how well I did. And you know, part of it was we did take, two of the shortcuts as opposed to zero or just one, like the millennials did one. And that made it more complicated. And, you know, it's like, God, I only memorized half the puzzle. Rachel only memorized half. Turned out we memorized the same half. So it was just a disaster.
Okay. So Rachel goes home first. You survive your first night on the first tribal council. So then after that, you know, you vote with the majority, but seemingly you are not in the majority as things begin to develop where you're feeling like you're at the bottom.
Yeah, I was absolutely at the bottom. It was me, Ken, and Cece at the bottom of the minority alliance. And, I with all the damage I'd done, there was no way I was going to get back in the good graces of Chris, Brett, and Paul, and Sunday and Jessica. At that point, anyway, and I was like, well, here we are. But I had Ken, and I could trust him, and I knew that everything he told me was the truth, and he wasn't going to go behind my back.
Did you have a bond with Cece, or it was just like, hey, I'm on the bottom and you're on the bottom, and then you end up just being friends because you guys are at the same lunch table?
Yeah, I mean, Cece and I, we bonded for sure by virtue of being on the bottom and feeling like we were going to go home at any time and just feeling so desperate for some luck or some advantage. But yeah, I love Cece. She's fantastic.
Okay, so and then Ken, I feel like, is in an interesting position, too, because from what we've heard from other people from the Gen X tribe that, you know, Ken was welcome to be in the majority alliance with the other guys, with, you know, Paul and Chris and with Brett, but he seemed for whatever reason to gravitate towards you. Was that part of anything that you were doing?
I wasn't doing it intentionally. I mean, I wanted to work with Ken and I wanted to form an alliance with him. But what I couldn't appreciate or know in advance is that his backstory is similar to mine. He looks like he does now, and it's shocking to hear that what he went through as a kid, but yeah, he just didn't fit in growing up. And so he saw that in me. And so that I think is really why we had such a bond out there, because he saw himself in me. And I think also with Ken, I think he wanted a leadership position. It just ended up that Paul kind of had that. And I think that that sort of put Ken on the opposite side, and he found a little scrawny bald guy that he could form an alliance with. Ken was just, he brought so much fish back. He kept us alive. That octopus was like the best meal I think any of us had ever had in our lives.
Squid, Sir Squiddington.
There was a squid later, but yeah, that initial was just a giant octopus that I was like,
Octopus Prime.
Octopus Prime. That's right. And I feel a little bad because I guess octopuses, or am I saying, I said octopi. They're like the pigs of the sea. They're like really intelligent, but anyway, we needed a meal.
Look, you got to eat out there.
You got to eat. Yeah.
You know? So at this time in the game, you also find the first idol that you're going to find during the game. Could you just touch on what that was like?
Oh, that was the best feeling in the world. I mean, to as paranoid as I was, to then come back from the cyclone, survive a tribal council, form a strong bond with Ken, and then to find that idol, I felt like finally my game was starting to turn around. And you know, I did it more organically in my search. I had tore up that island in the days before that, looking for hours and hours and hours. But this was, I was collecting rocks to use as stools, and then looking for the idol as I was doing that. And I was trying to hurry back as fast as I could with each rock and like search as fast as I could. And no one got wise to it. So it worked out.
Did anybody else look for the idol as much as you did? Probably nobody looked as much as you did, but did anybody else really mount a hunt for the idol?
Not really. Not at that point. I think that people were worried that looking for an idol would just put a target on your back. And certainly when you look for an idol and people can see you look for an idol, it does put a target on your back. But people were focused more on, I think, the bonds they had and strengthening those that trust. And for me, I just needed to find that idol, and I felt that sharing that information with Ken would only further deepen the trust that we had.
Was that an idea you came into the game with? If I find an idol, I'm going to tell people about it? Or was that something that just like, okay, I trust Ken, and so let me tell him about this one thing that I have?
I had not planned in advance to tell anybody if I found an idol. In fact, I think my plan was to not tell anybody if I found one. But I did, you know, I felt like I gave Ken enough reasons to maybe not trust me. And I thought this is going to seal the deal with this wonderful relationship that we now have. This is going to be the ultimate,
the closer.
The closer. Exactly. I've got him if I can show him this idol. And so, yeah.
All right. So then you have your idol and you have Ken on your side, but things are still, you know, not great in terms of how the alliances are going. And Paul is, at least on the show, depicted to be sort of a dictator in terms of how things are going. Was that actually how it was?
I mean, I wouldn't ever describe Paul as a dictator. He's a super great guy. He certainly was the leader of the camp. And he actually provided more food than was shown. But the guy, you know, knows what to do out there. Like I'd really trust him. Whatever he thought was the right thing to do in terms of just the survival aspects, I'm like, yeah. I mean, he taught me, he and Ken both taught me to make fire, or how to keep one going once you had it. So yeah, I depended on them a lot, but yeah, he was a leader. And obviously, you know, it's not good to take a leadership position on Survivor that puts a giant target on your back. And certainly that's what happened with Paul.
Did you have a lot of interaction with the people that weren't in the alliance with you and Ken and CC? Like, were the other people sort of keeping you at arm's length because you were marked for eviction?
No, they really weren't, actually. Everybody was so kind. I actually had the thought, I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'm not actually on Survivor because everybody is just so damn nice. Mm-hmm. But no, they talked to me. I was able to talk to Jessica. I was able to talk to Sunday and Lucy. Lucy was kind of the chef of the camp, and she was really good to me, and she fed me, and I felt, you know, really guilty about what I did there. But yeah, everyone was really kind to me. It wasn't like I was wearing like a scarlet letter or anything.
So you're also going to have the Survivor Summit in the early days of the game. What was that like to have gone through?
You know, I put my hand, they didn't show, I put my hand into that bag and I drew the right rock. I'm like, oh, this is great. I can like establish all these relationships on the other side. And I was hoping for pizza and beer. I was, you know, I was so hungry, as I was every day, you know, the thought of like, oh, good survivor food, a feast. Right. And it was peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, which are great, but I wanted pizza and beer. But yeah, it was great to actually meet the millennials, the ones I did at that moment. And then again, shout, I trust you at Taylor, because going back to my old ways. But, you know, that ended up not paying off later in the game, though we did have a conversation with it about it once the merge happened. But I never got to exploit that relationship.
So going back to Vegas, so Taylor and Figgy both were in Vegas. Was that weird?
Actually, Taylor was not in Vegas. Okay. Figgy was.
He had to get back to his family.
Yeah, yeah, he's a dad. He's got to get back to his kid. So yeah, Taylor did not make Vegas.
I was wondering what that must have been like to go through. If you were nervous on the island, that'll give you some anxiety.
Yeah, exactly.
So eventually things are just going to start to turn against Paul. We got to see on the show the conversation that Paul ends up having with Jessica, where he says like, hey, if anything goes down, I'm going to stick with the guys. And so did you have any sort of like inkling that was a possibility that the women might defect away from Paul before that point? Because I don't have a great recollection of how that vote came together.
Yeah. I mean, basically, you know, I wanted to put a target on Paul's back, and I talked to Ken and Cece about it, but it had nothing to do with me. That came entirely from Jessica. I think her paranoia from that conversation that she had with Paul, I think she was safe. I think she kind of misread what Paul meant by that. But I mean, it worked good for my game. Yeah. And truthfully, the unfair thing about Paul, in terms of the things I did, is that I judged him during the pregame. I thought that he was going to be a Russell Hance, and I thought he was going to be this bruiser, and I couldn't trust him. And it was, you know, I'd seen him like, throwing air punches during pregame, and I was in an elevator with him at one point. You know, he can't talk, but I looked at him, and I'm like, this guy looks like a scary guy. And then you meet him, and he's actually the nicest guy in the world. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he had a leadership position, and he said what he said to Jessica. She took it the way she took it. And then I felt like, oh, it looks like this can actually happen. We can vote Paul out.
Was part of it that she felt like that she had a potential other way to go with you and Ken when you guys had continuing talks where you were like a viable backup plan?
I'm sure. I mean, she had a very good relationship with Ken, and as did I. Jessica and I, we weren't so super close. We you know, we talked, but in terms of the bond, she had a very strong bond with Ken. And so, and we'll get to this later, but I mean, that's one of the reasons I did play my idol for her, because I wanted it to be me, Ken, and Jessica going forward, because I thought that I know I can trust these people.
Well, let's talk about that, because the following vote after Paul goes home, it looks as though Jessica is going to be the person who goes out, that the women who voted with her sort of end up turning back, going back to Chris and Brett. And things are looking pretty bad, where it looks like that, you know, Lucy has now sort of reemerged. And even in the edit, they're calling her. She's the new dictator. She's the new Paul. She's running things. Was that actually the case?
Yeah, I mean, really what it was, at least from my perspective, is that I love Lucy and she was so nice to me, but she would only dole out so much information, and she would tell you that I'm not going to tell you everything. And you know what that tells you is, well, this person doesn't trust me. If this person doesn't trust me, then I can't trust them.
She barked orders at Ken.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, she definitely could have handled that differently. And then certainly when Ken wanted to vote her out, I'm like, well, we should do this. It would be good. I don't want, like, Lucy wasn't even saying where some of this stuff was coming from, like some of the information that she had. I mean, obviously it was coming from Chris and Brett, but. But like, yeah, she just would not give you, she wouldn't even pretend to give you all the information. And I think that was just a flaw in her game. But if she were to go back, I think she'd play a much better game now.
Yeah. So we'll be waiting for the Lucy return any season now, David. It's coming. It's coming. So then, well, at that vote, I believe this is when you said, this is a live tribal tonight, Jeff, correct?
That's right, yes. Hashtag live tribal.
Was it live for anybody else except for you with the idol in your pocket? Was anybody else making up their mind at the tribal council?
You know, I mean, people walk into tribal with an idea of what they're going to do. I think for the most part, it generally goes that way. Obviously, people get blindsided and it doesn't go that way for them. But I think for the most part, at that particular tribal, it was probably just live for me. You know, it's funny. Ken was actually supposed to vote with me. I mean, not that he even needed to, because all the votes were being thrown on Jessica, and it's between Jessica and Lucy. But I would say for Ken, it was live, because he felt hurt by Jessica running off and talking to Lucy about the conversation they had. And so, yeah, before tribal, he told me that he was going to write down Lucy's name, but he ended up writing down Jessica's. They obviously eventually repaired their relationship, but it was, for me, a very nerve-wracking tribal, and I was so worried about what people are going to say when I got back to camp, what kinds of fights I was going to have, but I felt like it was the right move for me and you know, obviously for Jessica.
So you were sort of wrestling with this decision, but what happened at that tribal council that made you pull the trigger on making this move?
You know, it was just mainly about removing people from the game that I didn't trust or who didn't trust me, and keeping people in the game who I felt I could build trust with and could work together going forward. I did believe that a tribe swap was imminent. And so I know not everybody likes the move, but I felt like, you know what, just thinking deeper into the game, better to have people that you trust in the game than people you don't.
And I disagreed with the move at the time, but when we spoke back on the red carpet, you said that this was, you thought, your best move in the entire game.
I do. Because I, at least for me, you know, not for some other people, but I really, all you want in that game is trust. And I felt that that gave me the trust I needed from Jessica, and it made me feel good about talking to Jessica. I knew Jessica probably wasn't going to keep me or let me last till final three, but I felt like I could go pretty deep with the trust I had with her and obviously the trust I had with Ken. So other people in the game, I told them I trusted them, but I really didn't.
So I know it worked out very well for you doing that. Do you think that in a vacuum that more people should be looking at using the idol in that way of potentially, instead of just holding it to save it for yourself, using it on an ally earlier in the game to keep somebody that you have a relationship with in the game versus somebody you don't?
I do. I actually think it's better to use the idol on other people, because in a game of trust, that absolutely solidifies the relationships that you have with that, or the relationship that you have with that other person. Obviously, it puts a target on your back, but at the same time, once you play the idol, they know you don't have one, and it's like, okay, we don't need to worry about David as much anymore. He wasted it; it's gone. But I stand by the move.
Yeah, it's a good point that when you play the idol for somebody else and you get it right, a lot of things happen where, you know, that other person will feel positive feelings towards you. And also the idea of that, oh, he has an idol, is sort of reduced because you obviously have just played it and it's something that's positive for your alliance. There's also other downsides of other people saying like, oh, would he have played an idol on me? Or, you know, why didn't he play an idol on me when I was potentially in trouble on this night? Or if he had it last time, you know, why didn't he use it before? But I do think that you make a lot of good points in terms of, I think that probably people that watch this season, future players, I think we'll see more idol plays happening because that this season was just so dominated by that.
Yeah, and it's really player dependent, because, you know, you could make that same move in another season with other players and it could completely backfire. So you just never know, really.
Did you really get that started in this season, or was it something that was sort of fresh in your mind from watching in, you said, maybe like Jeremy Collins play an idol on Steven? Was that just sort of like in the ether in terms of people, a lot of people thinking that way, or was that specific to this season?
I mean, I'm sure I was influenced by past seasons, whether I'm conscious of it or not. But yeah, I was just feeling like so desperate that I wanted to make a big move like that and preserve the people in the game that I trusted, because there were just so many more people that I didn't trust.
And so after that tribal council, Jessica stays in the game. What does she say to you after, like, is she like, or are you blown away, like, how appreciative she is about that? Or is just like, sort of like, hey, thanks. And then moves on.
No, she was so super, thankful to me. And she told me several times, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And, you know, even walking out of tribal, she came up to me and I was at that moment feeling like, I was feeling a bit sheepish because I'm like, oh, we're going back to camp now and everyone's going to yell at me. So I was just, and I felt like, you know, I was just ready for a storm when we got back. As it turns out, everyone wasn't really mad at me that much at all. It was more about the conflict that Jessica had with the other people.
So you then, before you swap, find another idol. And, you know, you have this advantage where you are able to know what the idol looks like. Seems like nobody else is really looking for them on the Gen X tribe. And you're the only person who knows what these idols look like. And you very quickly find another one. Was that as it was depicted?
Wasn't that quick. I was looking in the wrong place for a long time. But yeah, I did feel very confident the fact that I was the only one who knew how they were hidden. Even though I did tell Ken that I had found an idol, I didn't tell him the truth about how it was hidden. And so I was the only one who knew. And yeah, I was actually with Sunday and Cece. We were all looking in the same area at one point. And then I spotted it. I'm like, oh God, they need to leave. They need to leave right now. Please leave. I want to grab this thing. And unfortunately, they got tired eventually, went back to camp. And then, yeah, and then I had another idol.
Okay. And what were you feeling as you ended up with another idol? Because, I mean, this was such a big swing for the fences move you made by saving Jessica. But then it costs you your idol. But then to find it again, like, just emotionally, what is that feeling like?
Oh, it was fantastic. It was like a boomerang. You know, you throw it and it comes right back. And you know, for me, because I was still nervous and paranoid about my game. I think I told you this before, like, you know, you're what you say in this podcast was just echoing through my head, like, you know, play the idol and then just look for it the next day. And that worked out for me. And you know, just live another day in the game. And, to have an idol, it just gives you that little bit of extra security that, if you do feel like you're at a tribal and things aren't going well for you, and I think you can kind of pick up on that, then yeah, you have it to play.
What I've said for a long time is that I think you can live with, I played the idol at the wrong time more than I went home with the idol in my pocket. I think that would be an easier thing to live with, because I go through my life just sort of like, okay, well, which failure could I live with more? And then that's sort of the direction that I go in. So I thought that I've always felt I would play it if I got nervous rather than live my life and say, like, I was nervous and I didn't play my idol.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny. Yeah, you played in Survivor before there were hidden immunity idols.
Yes.
So yeah,
it's
interesting. But that's exactly what I think. That's good advice.
So then you get to the tribe swap and you're happy that you're going to be swapped because you're on the bottom, of course. And you end up with this grouping, which ends up with you and Chris and Cece with Zeke and Michelle. And so are you back to feeling good because, hey, there's three Gen Xers?
Oh, I was feeling great. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm in a majority Gen X group here, even though, you know, I was with Chris, who I didn't think particularly trusted me. But yeah, I felt like, well, he's going to vote out one of these millennials and it's not going to be me. So, yeah, I was feeling really great after that swap.
So we haven't touched much on Chris. And so he, based on confessionals and things that we're seeing, he's pretty PO'd about the whole Jessica thing. Do you have a sense of how angry he is about this?
Back at the camp, he did make one comment about it, but he was definitely, at least it seemed to me, his beef was more with Jessica than it was with me. But I did know that he certainly didn't trust me, and I gave him every reason not to. I gave everybody every reason not to trust me. So yeah, I felt a bit insecure about his trust in me, but I did believe that, you know, in a majority Gen X swap, that I felt fairly safe.
Now he's going to go and start talking to Zeke and Michelle about potentially doing something with them. Do you think that that was his plan all along, or that there was in that episode when, you know, you and Cece both are having a lot of trouble with all of the buoys that are going on in that episode? So do you feel like that it was based on challenge performance that he thought about flipping, or that was his plan all along?
Well, I think Chris is just a great Survivor player, so I think he's going to try to manage as many relationships and forge as many paths or potential paths that he can. So, but I do think that certainly Cece being voted out had a lot to do with his perception of her challengeability. I think mine was equally as bad, if not worse. But when he wanted to vote out her instead of me, I'm like, okay, yeah, let's get Cece. Because I felt like I wasn't really contributing anything to my tribe. And Michelle is such an amazing puzzle solver. And Zeke was great too. Zeke is great at the physical game and the mental game. So yeah, I think that Chris based that particular vote on his perception of CC's challenge abilities.
Did you become even tighter with CC going into this swap, or were you sort of like just still, if anything, maybe less tight because you weren't both still bonded by being on the bottom?
No, I felt actually, it's awful. I felt more tight with CC, and that it would hurt to vote her out too. But you know, in a game where there can only be one winner at the end of the day, it's like, okay, well, if it's either her or me. But yeah, I loved hanging out with CC, and I felt calm around her. And I really did think that we were going to maybe pick off Michelle or Zeke before we ever went after our own, but it didn't work out that way.
Yeah. And who of Zeke and Michelle were you pushing to get rid of first? Michelle?
I wanted to get rid of Michelle. Yeah. You know, I heard so many rumors about,
because you heard that she was trying to get rid of you.
No, I just heard about the kind of game from Zeke that she was playing, back at the Millennial Tribe and camp. And I thought, yeah, that's not someone that's going to want to work with me. Let's get rid of her.
Because if I remember at that tribal council, you know, she basically comes out and says that I wanted to vote out David tonight. And I believe that that's when you say, this is fun.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you're sorry. Yeah, right. You're right. Yes. It did get back to me that she wanted to vote me out, and that was a surprise to me. That's what Cece told me based on the conversation that she had in the hammock. And she tried to make that happen, but she eventually realized that Chris had his eyes set on Cece.
Yeah, because if I remember this correctly, and again, some of this pre-merge stuff is a little foggy for me, I'm sure for a lot of the listeners, it must be too. Chris goes and talks to Zeke and Michelle about potentially working with them, and he mentions voting out Cece, but Michelle wants to vote out you, so Michelle goes back and talks to Cece, and then Cece blows up the whole thing about how she was trying to talk to me, and she wants to vote you out, correct?
That's right, that's right. You know, I whether Cece had told me or not, I think Cece was still going to go home that night. But yeah, that was news to me. It wasn't a complete shock. I love Michelle. In that camp, she and I never talked strategy, and I don't think got super close. I loved her as a person, but I never felt like I could ever trust her. And this was based mainly on what Zeke was telling me about her, which was all true in terms of the game she was playing.
And what was your relationship like with Zeke at this point in time? Because that's going to end up becoming such a key relationship in the game.
I love Zeke. We bonded very quickly. I think Zeke is a lot like me. He's kind of the... he cries a lot less, but we actually bonded over Rahap. We bonded over your podcast. We were big listeners, and we bonded over Love of Survivor. And I really feel like he's one of the people out there that I related to the most. You know, he doesn't wear his insecurities on his sleeve as much, but you know, he still has them. And so, yeah, I really felt comfortable talking to him, and I felt like we spoke the same language and saw the game the same way.
Did you feel like that you and Chris ended up really getting on the same page during this point?
We really did. I got a lot closer to Chris during the swap, and he and I had lots of great conversations. And I do think that, you know, we could have left him in the game a little longer, but not much longer for my game. I think he would have come after me eventually. So, but yeah, I loved Chris, and my God, without him, there's so many challenges that I would not have been on the team that won. I mean, he was just such a beast out there. And I mean, he could lift up the island by himself if he wanted to.
So at the point that you're with this group of four, Are you talking about what's going to happen at the merge? Because I'm trying to imagine in your mind, what does the best case scenario look like for, like, who are you trying? Obviously, you're trying to get back to Ken and trying to get back to Jessica. But are you thinking that I'm going to, you know, add Chris and Zeke to that and potentially, like, I don't know where you go from there.
Yeah, I mean, what I was thinking was I wanted to get rid of Michelle because, you know, we had heard the alliance that she had with the existing millennials. And so I definitely wanted to get rid of her, or really anybody in that alliance, like, you know, Taylor and Jay. And so I also wanted to get rid of Chris, cause I felt like even though I was bonding a lot more with Chris, I was worried that he wasn't going to ultimately trust me and that he would want to target me. But yeah, Michelle, was who I wanted most to get rid of, because I certainly knew that here I've been on an island now with her in a small group of people, and I don't feel any closer to her than when I first met her. Mm-hmm. And so I really wanted to get rid of her.
But did you have like a group of six or seven that you were thinking about, this is going to be my group to go to the merge with?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely wanted Zeke to be a part of that. I was hopeful that Ken and Jessica would be a part of that. And then I just had like a whole bunch of targets on millennials that I didn't want to be around.
Yeah.
Nothing personal about them, just about like, I know that I'm not going to be able to relate to them. I did not think that, the conversation I had with Taylor would yield much. So he certainly wasn't anyone that I wanted to keep around as well. And he was in, working with Michelle and Jay and Figgy, although by the merge, of course, Figgy's not there.
So were you sort of just like relying on Zeke to say, okay, Adam and Hannah, they're the cool millennials and everybody else we should be getting rid of?
It's really it. I mean, I related so much to them. As soon as Hannah got off the boat, I told her, I'm like, you're millennial me. I mean, I could tell just from like what I had seen in the game. I at that point had no conversations with her, but I could just tell that she was basically me. Mm-hmm. And there's this really nice scene that didn't make the air, but it's on one of the secret YouTube scenes. And we really bonded. She's me, just, you know, younger, 18 years younger, but she's female, but she's yes. Essentially me. We, you know, I remember one night we were walking to talk strategy on the beach, and she tripped over a rock or a shell. And then I, 3 seconds later, tripped over a rock as well. Like the same thing just kept happening to us. And we could finish each other's sentences. We would also find ourselves sometimes in really circular conversations, and to the annoyance of, I'm sure, many. But I really relate to Hannah so much, and to Zeke. And I felt just, you know, I wanted to like have this nerd alliance going forward. Even though, of course, Hannah told me what she told me about Zeke. Because the thing about Zeke, if he had one flaw in his game, I felt that it was, you should have an individual conversation with everyone in the game. You should, but you shouldn't do it in front of other people. Like, other people shouldn't be able to witness that. And I saw that in Zeke, and I saw it in Hannah as well. And I thought, well, can you trust it? It looked like you wonder, is your relationship real? Like, can you really trust these people? Cause they look so duplicitous.
Yeah. That's interesting. So you're saying that when people have these conversations, and I always say on Survivor, you know, you want to be, you know, whoever the other person needs you to be. So you saw those types of conversations and you saw them almost take on a different part of their personality to interact with a different person in front of you, and you almost didn't recognize that person.
Yeah, that's it. And then, you know, you just have those thoughts in your head, like, why are they talking to them right now? And I also think that it is important to have individual conversations with everyone. Don't do it in front of everyone. And the other thing is that I think it's good to have conversations organically. Don't ever go up to someone and say, hey, can I talk to you over here for a minute? Because it's like, well, what are you going to talk about?
Yeah, why can't I be there?
Exactly. And it's best to do them quickly. And I think that this is something Jeremy Collins did in Second Chance. It's important to rebuild those relationships every day, have a conversation every day just to remind people, like, we're good, right? We're good. And I think that's super helpful. And so, you know, I remember having a conversation with Chris. I'm like, you know, Zeke, I love him, but he's winning this game. He's got a good relationship with everyone. He has, you know, he's talking to everybody, so he's a threat. But of course, we got rid of Chris before we got rid of Zeke.
Okay, so just in the rest of the swap, then Figgy is going to get voted out. Michaela is going to get voted out. Were you pumped up to see two millennials go home?
It felt great. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Okay, yeah, we're gonna the things look like they might actually be going my way. Yeah, and then you know, once the merge happened, I found out the good relationship that Ken and Adam and Jessica had, and that felt really good because I felt like I had a good relationship with Ken and Jessica, and so I felt like my alliance or the people that I could trust was growing rather than shrinking.
So we got to the merge, and this is the point where the millennials are really starting to turn on one another. There's all the drama that's going on between Taylor and Adam at that point, and this is when Taylor starts walking off with the food. I had thought that this would be, you know, a great opportunity for Gen X to really reassert themselves in the game. Ultimately, that's going to go by the wayside. But were you thinking about that at all, about a all Gen X alliance moving forward?
No. I mean, and maybe that speaks to how I was feeling and how the connections that I was making with the millennials. I really, even though the game went the way it did, I did really believe in the bond I had with Zeke and the bonds I had with Hannah, and I definitely wanted to keep them around. I knew most likely they weren't going to take me to Final Three either, but certainly I felt like I could go fairly deep in the game as long as they were around. So yeah, I think once the merge happened, the theme of the season, Millennials versus Gen X, I really think just didn't exist anymore. It was more about the people that you trust. I think I said this, versus the people other people could trust.
So the Millennials, though, they are planning on sticking together, and then ultimately Michelle and Taylor and Jay and Will, they're all voting one way, and I guess they're assuming that they have Adam and Hannah on board with their vote. And who do they vote for? Are they voting for Chris?
Who the Figgy
at
and
the merge,
or not Figgy?
At the merge.
They voted for, oh God.
Who cares?
Yeah, so, I don't even remember at this point.
But you guys end up voting for Michelle. Now, I remember when we were going through the exit interviews that I believe it was talked about that this was your idea. You were the one that came up with the idea for Michelle.
I was pushing for it. I don't remember if I'm the one who came up for it, but I was definitely pushing for it because I love you, Michelle, if you're listening, but I just didn't trust her at all. And again, based on the fact that we just didn't have a super tight relationship in the days that we spent on a small tribe together.
How big of a deal was the Taylor stealing the food?
It was so huge. It was huge. I had such an emotional reaction when I found that out. And I do think, by the way, it's a good move to do that in an individual game. It's not a good move to let anybody know about it or anybody see it. But certainly, like, yeah, if you're going to be more fed and stronger in these individual immunity challenges, then great. But yeah, when that came out, I had such an emotional reaction. I felt like no, you can't do that. You can't take food out of our mouths. And it so bad to the point where, honestly, once the game was over, a friend of mine took a sandwich from another friend of mine, and I just like blew up on them. It was kind of a trigger. So yeah, food is just so essential out there, and you take it so. We took it just so personally, and so we were just so offended when we found that out.
Could you give me any sort of like memorable interaction that you had with Taylor while you were out there? Because I feel like that seems like comedy gold. Just you and Taylor.
Yeah, the truth is, Taylor and I didn't really hang out all that much. You know, each night, all of us would we would answer one question. Like, I would propose a question, or Zeke would propose a question.
Like, what kind of question?
Like, okay, now everybody, you know, this is like before we're going to bed. Like, okay, now, have you ever been arrested, or you know, what's the craziest thing that's ever happened to you, or whatever? And I remember Taylor having some story about harassing a teacher of his. So I learned about him from those stories more than anything. But we didn't spend a lot of like individual time together.
Okay, so Taylor is going to ultimately go home here. And this is when Adam starts to get blown up a little bit too, because then he gets outed for having the reward stealing advantage. Was that a big deal at all to you guys, or did the TV show just make it into something?
It's very interesting. At that particular tribal, I think the edit made it look like it was between Taylor and Adam. The reality is that it was between Taylor and Jay. And in fact, I think the votes reflect that. But as far as that reward stealing advantage, and I think you've said this, and I thought it, we all thought it out there, is that it really was a disadvantage. And especially when we learned that Adam was kind of thinking about using it at the loved one's reward. And obviously none of us at that point knew what we knew about Adam. Mm-hmm. Certainly I get why it was so important to him to want to use it for that. And I would have too. And obviously he didn't need to. And but yeah, I remember that was... I remember just thinking, like, God, who would want that advantage? Like, that's not a good advantage to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, we told him, like, look, use it for anything you want. It's your advantage. But, you know, if I were you, I wouldn't use it for the loved one's visit, because taking away love is like bigger than taking away a sandwich.
And was he receptive to that? Did he put you at ease?
He thought about it. Certainly. I remember actually the conversation we had. I remember him sitting there, and I remember him like really taking that in and thinking about it. And that probably should have said something to me, but he got it. And in the end, he didn't use it, and he didn't have to. And I'm so glad that he got to see his brother and get the information that he got. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I love Adam, and I'm so happy that he could connect with his brother in that moment.
So then Taylor goes home. And so basically it's like, you know, this is the intermission of the season of like the, you know, act one is over of, you know, we had some fun, had some laughs. There was a lot of kooky characters, but now this really starts to go into like, you know, power player going home, and the game ends up like going up about 10 levels at the point that we get to the Thanksgiving night of the double eviction episode. Now, was that a shortened time frame? I know it's a 2-hour episode for us, but was there less time between the Chris and the Jessica votes, if you remember?
I don't remember exactly how many days. I do know that the schedule of Tribals was significantly affected as a result of the cyclone. It messed up the schedule. And so towards the end of the game, yeah, we were going to Tribal once a day almost, mm-hmm. it seems.
Because it used to be you could set your watch by the Survivor schedule of, you know, 3 days, 3 days, 3 days. You knew, okay, you know, day 12 is a Tribal Council, 15 is a Tribal Council, 18 is a Tribal Council, you know, so that, you know, it gets all screwed up now with 18 people and 20 people and all sorts of things.
Yeah, that wasn't. Yeah, exactly. We there was no predicting when the tribals were going to be. Of course, the deeper you get, then it's obvious, like, well, there's only this many days left. It's got to happen now. But yeah, we were always because they don't tell you anything. We were always trying to figure out in the sand, like, OK, what do you think tomorrow is? And lots of conversations about that.
Who first has the idea? Let's get rid of Chris.
God,
is it you or is it Zeke?
I believe it was me, because I remember a conversation I had with Jessica and Ken where I remember saying, like, I think Zeke would want to do this. Like, I don't think I'd actually talked to him about it at that point. And in hindsight, I actually think that getting rid of Chris for anyone else except for me and Jessica and maybe Ken was a bad move. But because also in hindsight, you know, I was so worried that A, Chris was going to want to vote me out, but also that Chris was just so strong that he would do really well in individual immunity mm-hmm. challenges. And the truth is, a lot of those individual immunity challenges were not suited.
He's not built for that.
He's not. He's much, much better for like the big brawny guy just lifting like mountains. And that's just not what those individual challenges are about.
So was it ultimately that you guys shot first in the Han Solo versus Greedo of it all? Was Chris coming for Jessica first, or were you guys coming for Chris first?
I believe Chris was coming for Jessica first.
Chris shot first.
Yeah. And you know, she had been on his list since the Paul vote, and that relationship was never going to be healed. And so I think that for Chris, it was just an obvious vote out. But yeah, it worked to my advantage, obviously, that he wanted to target her, and then I could go to her when she now trusted me because I played the idol for her, and she was all about getting rid of Chris then.
Were you concerned that Zeke was playing both sides?
Well, I was super concerned because I did see all these conversations that he was having, and you just I felt that it was in his interest to get rid of Chris. In hindsight, looking back, I'd say it wasn't. But at the time, I did feel like he would want to get rid of Chris, and so that I could trust him for that vote. And in the end, he voted the way he did, and it worked out.
So on your side, you have you and Ken and Jessica and Zeke and Adam and Hannah.
That's right.
Right? On your side. And the other group is Chris and Brett and Sunday, and they have Jay and Will.
That's right.
Okay. And so that is there any sort of doubt in terms of going into that tribal council?
At least on my end?
Yeah.
No, I didn't have any doubt for that one. I felt really good about that one. I can't remember if I didn't have immunity, I don't think, right, at that point. Or did I? I might have.
I think
I did.
You know
what?
Yeah, because I remember the Thanksgiving episode. So not only did you have immunity, but this is also the episode where there's going to be the reward challenge and you're going to split into teams. And this was when you said, you know, Jeff, if it's okay, I volunteer to be, because one person, it was 11 people, one person had to sit out of the 5 for 5. Let me be the person to sit out of the challenge. And Steven and I talked on the know-it-alls, and I wondered, you know, was there any sort of, was that strategic at all of, you know, I don't want to get voted out. You know, this will be a nice gesture for everybody. I will appear weak, or was that a genuine thing that was, you know, that you were really just concerned about people being upset with you?
It is both. And I would actually say being worried about people being upset at you and trying to avoid that is strategic. I really did not want to be blamed for people not eating and giving them a reason to vote me out. But I did really, I really was moved by all their support. And honestly, you know, I looked at that challenge before I said those things, and I thought that it actually involved significantly more swimming. And in the end, it's only like, I don't know, 15, 20 feet of swimming. That I can do.
I think I might have also said, was it strategic that they said, no, no, we want you to play? Were they just being nice, or were they just like, hey, we want you to fail so that we can have an easy person to scapegoat to vote out?
Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, Survivor isn't so black and white. I think there's a lot of gray, and I think it could be both. I think that they really did like me and were supporting me. But I think also, too, it's like, yeah, you know, we'll get rid of you. It'll be easy.
But here you are. And so much was made about your transformation, you know, to go from day 31 to day 38. And really owning who you are out there. At what point did the game start to slow down for you, where you started to feel like you had your legs under you and you weren't as, you know, it's just only a moderately afraid as opposed to being afraid all the time?
Once Chris was gone and I didn't have to worry about that, that triforce of Chris, Brett, and Sunday, I felt like, okay, this is maybe going to work out for me. At the same time, I do believe that, you know, being as vulnerable as I was and endearing myself to all the people that I did, I was feeling like this isn't good for me, because, you know, there's such a gigantic target on my back, because just nobody wants to sit next to me at Final Three, except that I did think that Ken would. I really did believe, and it sounds so incredibly naive, walking into that final tribal, not to jump ahead to that, but walking into that, I did believe that Ken was not going to vote my name down. But then 30 seconds in, I'm like, oh yeah, he is. He's absolutely going to write my name down.
But that's still a shift in talking about like things you were concerned about in the game, being nervous about the game, from where you started, where you said you just had, you know, all of this anxiety and fear, fear that you were going to die all the time. You had a fear of death everywhere. I'm not sure only in Survivor or in and out of Survivor. Did that start to slow down when you were playing Survivor?
It did somewhat. Yeah, I really did feel like I was undergoing all this personal growth and coming to terms with my fears. You know, the thing about Survivor, I've said this, I think, before, but like, because I do have such a fear of death, Survivor to me, it's like this fantasy where you can cheat death. And so I felt like I was like closer to myself.
It's not real.
Right. Yeah. And I felt like I can, you know, you can't cheat death in real life, but maybe you can do it in the game of Survivor. So yeah, that my anxiety was definitely lowering with those things. And, you know, like at the beginning of the game, I was so scared. There were birds that thought we were their parents, that they would come out at night and like run across our faces. And I remember I was sleeping next to Brett and Rhett woke up and these birds were like the size of chickens and there was just one was just sitting on him.
And he didn't name it and potentially get Sia invested in this season?
No, he didn't. And this is horrible. I swear this bird is fine. It lived, but there was this one bird that ran through the fire, caught on fire, and then ran into our shelter. And you could just smell burnt feathers. In the end, it walked off and it was fine. But the fruit bats, and you'd wake up and like crabs are crawling on you. You know, there's a lot of things to like make someone like me, who I don't like being outside, anxious.
Do you still deal with that? This really intense fear of death? Because I think that probably most people have some fear of death.
I feel, yeah, it's funny. I feel like I would think that they should, but yeah. I definitely am still afraid of death. But I will say that I did for many years let it get in the way of living my life. And I try not to do that now coming out of this experience. I've got like all these things lined up. Actually, Zeke's coming out here. We're going to run a Spartan race and I've got some trips planned and I'm afraid of flying too, because you lose all control when you fly. But I've got a lot of flights lined up this year that I'm like, all right, I'm going to live my life a little more.
Getting back to where we are in the game. So Chris ends up going home. The next vote, you're going to be turning on Zeke. But before you end up at that point, what is your next thought? Is it to go back to Jay and potentially start to either flush his idol or go after Will or Brett?
Yeah, I mean, God, kudos to Jay. First of all, that guy is incredible at every single aspect of the game, be it the social, be it the physical, everything. And I thought he showed such incredible restraint in terms of not playing his idol. But I definitely wanted to get him out of the game or get him to flush his idol, because I thought, you know, there's just no way that if he got anywhere near final five, he's just going to make it into the three just from challenge performances alone. And I couldn't believe, like, the night that Taylor went home, if I remember right, it was between him, Jay, and Taylor. And I couldn't believe that Jay didn't like play his idol. I mean, like, there's so much like attention on
that. He looked at the lights.
Yeah.
The lights told him not to do it.
It's amazing. But he was definitely who I was interested in getting rid of. But then, of course, Hannah came to me and says, hey, guess what? Brett ran and told Zeke about the conversation you had with him in the morning. I'm like, oh. And I never intended to target Zeke at that moment in the game. Yeah. I just wanted to plant the seeds that, look, he's a threat.
So give me the timeline of events just so you refresh all of our memories. So Brett and Sunday were sort of the two-point, with all due respect to Brett and Sunday. But they were basically Chris's, they were working with Chris.
And they were always going to work together. Yeah, those three could trust each other.
And so now you have these two free electrons that are out there. And so there's a little bit of a scramble now that you want to pick them up and Zeke wants to pick them up. So before Zeke has a chance to talk to them, or did Zeke already talk to them?
Oh, this is great. It's a great question. Yeah, after the tribal where Chris went home, Zeke had a conversation that night, I believe, on the beach with Brett. And I think Sunday was there, but whether... Actually, you know what? She might not have been, as a matter of fact. I think actually Sunday was with Hannah and I. Hannah was feeling really guilty. I'm combining all these different tribals. In any case, Zeke had a conversation with...
It makes me feel less bad about being confused about stuff. Oh, you were there.
I was there. Yeah. I mean, this is months ago. I should have like written down everything and like read my notes. But I do know for a fact that Zeke talked to Brett after the night that Chris went home, after that tribal, and I talked to Brett the next morning. For me, when I got back from tribal, I just wanted like a breather. I didn't want to do anything game related, and that's a mistake on my part. So I went to Sunday and Brett the next morning, and I said, hey, just so you guys know, yeah, I voted out Chris, but that doesn't mean that I think you guys are next. I wanted to pull them to my side, and I thought, like, why wouldn't you want to work with me and the people I have? But that wasn't to be. And so then, yeah, Brett went to Zeke and said, hey, guess what? David's targeting you. or wants to. And I didn't at that moment. I was just trying to lay the groundwork for eventually getting rid of Zeke because he was playing such a great game.
So do you think that the mistake was not going to them faster, or the mistake was that you thought you could trust them because they were going to hold you responsible for what happened to Chris no matter what?
I think that it would have been better for me to have talked to Brett that night, but I do think that nothing would have changed. I think he and Sunday both would have still gravitated towards Zeke, and Brett and Zeke, they really got along, and you know, you saw eventually they became these drinking buddies, even though Zeke hates beer. But I don't think there was anything to be done that would have had any that would have altered my game in any way, but just, it would have been better to have those conversations earlier.
And this 2-hour episode was really just so much fun. There were so many great moments in that. And so we had this scramble of you and Zeke both fighting over the same pawns. I'm sure as a chess player, you could appreciate that in the moment, was that how you were seeing it as well? Or is that just sort of a product of seeing it on television?
No, I did. I did see it because I felt, you look at votes, there's moves, like, you know, and so I had all these moves I felt were the right ones to make in a particular order. And then of course, Survivor being what it is, you find out that other people are thinking different things, and then you have to alter what your moves are, and it can get chaotic, and then you know, just the awful part where, like, because I felt such a bond with Zeke, even though I knew I couldn't trust him, I felt a bond with him, and then once it's like my people versus his people, then it's like it's just so icky, like hanging out at camp, and you know, you can't really go up and like shoot the.
Yeah.
I don't want to curse on your podcast, but it's just awkward. And I forget what even the question was.
Yeah. So you and Zeke both fighting over the same pawns on that reward challenge. And I forget exactly the circumstances of the reward. I think it was that you sat out, but then you got to be the person who got to go no matter who won.
Yes,
correct?
That's right. Yeah. The helicopter reward. And I had just really great rock drawing luck because I pulled the one rock, which meant I got to go on the reward without having to participate in that challenge. And I was so happy. His was the team that I wanted to win because I wanted to be near Zeke. And it's funny because he wanted to be near me for the very same reason. We were worried about what the other one was going to start doing. And it's so funny because, yeah, Zeke and I did see the game in so similarly that I felt like I could read his mind. Not well enough, it turns out.
So you guys both go to the reward challenge. And so this is where that scene happens between Brett and Zeke. I got on you the night that this episode aired. I said, what the hell is David doing? You said, I got to get up. I need to go take a walk. Steven said, no, that's code. That means he has to go do an interview. Was that code, or you really decided to go sightseeing on the beach?
No, Steven was right. I never wanted to leave anybody alone, but you know, yeah, what are you gonna do?
He doesn't need to hear this part. He gets a big head about these things. So yeah. I mean, do you realize at this point that things are starting to go sour between you and Zeke? Like, I know that you are starting to think about plotting against him. Do you feel like he is also plotting against you?
I did not think that he was plotting against me as much as he was. And at that moment, even though I would never would want to leave anybody alone, when Zeke went on the walk he went on during that reward, I re-upped with Brett and Sunday. I'm like, hey, just so you know, this guy's playing the best game, you know. But then it wasn't until I got back from that reward challenge that's when Hannah came up to me and told me that Zeke was telling people about my idol and that now there's this huge target on my back.
Okay, so things are really cooking at this point. We're headed into what will be a 5-5 rock draw. In your head, are you thinking that that's a possibility, that a 5-5 rock draw is on the table?
Oh, for sure, yeah. And I really thought, just the way everyone was lined up, it seemed likely. It became a question about whether or not anybody else would. I mean, certainly a tie was likely. Whether or not people are going to stick to the guns and then the revote, and then still a tie, and no one can agree on which person to vote out. But I felt like with the just the people I was playing with, like they're the kinds of people that would be willing to go to Rocks, and certainly obviously that's what happened.
But you still have a hidden immunity idol in your pocket.
Yeah.
So is the plan ultimately Rocks is the worst case scenario and you are going to suss out where the votes are going from that side and then successfully play the idol to save your side from the rock draw?
That would have been great. Yeah, I ended up playing the idol. Yeah, they didn't see it, but I ended up playing the idol on myself because I was so paranoid. I'm like, what the hell's going to happen? And, because obviously I knew Zeke was coming after me. For him, it was safer to go after Hannah. And I think he probably felt, you know, a little hurt and betrayed. Because she had been working so closely with him. But yeah, I played the idol for myself. And when I sat down, that's when Adam told me that he overheard that they were going to vote out Ken. Had I seen the conversation that he witnessed, because Sunday told Hannah that they were voting for Ken. I knew Sunday wouldn't tell Hannah the truth. I thought he had overheard a conversation that Sunday had with Brett. But in any case, I played the idol for myself, then I played it for Ken, and of course Ken didn't need it, and it did establish re-up the trust that I had with Ken, but I would have much rather played it for Hannah to avoid that situation. And God, the way Jessica went home, it was just so
okay,
hard.
Okay, well, so let's just take this one beat. This is a historic moment, and you're yada-yadding through so much of this stuff. Yeah. So going into that tribal council, did you guys have a solid fake plan of what you were telling those side? A lot was made about how Sunday told Hannah and Adam that it was going to be Ken, put the votes on Ken. What were you guys trying to tell them?
I mean, everybody knew that Zeke was the target, and I think I'm sure we floated Jay's name to them, or maybe we floated Will. I mean, I really should have written all this down. It's all a blur.
Well, it's not like you have a journal out there normally.
I wish I did, by the way. Yeah. But of course, then someone's going to find it and then they read it. And
right. Right.
We didn't talk. The only person I talked about actually going to Rocks with was Hannah. And at the tribal, Adam volunteered that he's like, I will go to Rocks. And it's like, okay, great. And I wanted to at that point. I mean, I had nothing to lose except that I did, because I lost Jessica as someone who trusted me and I really trusted.
But you could have lost.
I could have lost, but I thought, I felt good about the odds. And you know, there were more people on the other side drawing Rocks than on my side. So I felt pretty good.
Yeah.
And then to see her, oh God, draw that rock. It's just awful. I felt really bad. And, but what were you going to do?
I mean, but I think that it's still pretty amazing that you come into this game with all of this anxiety. And then here you are at, what is this, like day 27 or day 30, somewhere in that range. And you're sitting there, hey, let me draw a rock. If it happens, you know, who cares? So what? And let's just do the rock draw.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously the chances are the same for everybody, but I do get pretty lucky when it comes to that kind of thing. So I felt like, I don't think I'm going to draw the rock.
So you just feel like that you have amazing ability to pick a rock out of a bag? That's what it comes down to?
I really do. I have incredible luck at picking rocks out of the bag. And in that game, I had extraordinary luck. I mean, I drew the summit rock. I drew the reward rock. And then, of course, at the rocks, I drew the black rock.
Is that a table game that you could parlay in Vegas when you were there? Is there anything like, what is that good for in terms of gambling?
Oh, once you put money on it, then forget it. Then the odds are just the odds.
And $1 million of Survivor money doesn't count?
Well, it should. It should. Yeah, you're right. In hindsight, I probably should have not drawn a single rock.
Were you concerned anybody was flipping at the revote?
I actually was thinking, and as I think Hannah was too, that in fact I know she was, that Jessica was going to flip.
Yeah.
And her body language was suggesting that she was going to. But I was I was shocked and happy for the brief amount of time that I was when she didn't. But it didn't work out for her. She'll be back, no question.
Yeah. Will did a really great interview with Jordan Parhar this past week, and he talked about how he would have flipped if that he thought Jessica or Adam was going to flip. And so he didn't want to flip his vote and then sort of nullify them flipping by flipping to the other side.
Yeah, yeah. God, it could have gone so many other ways.
could have gone. But she ends up going out. And so was the other side celebrating the way that, I don't mean like taunting you guys, but, or was everybody just kind of like, oh my God, like everybody just like so emotional. Because in watching it, I mean, she's so devastated. It's hard to get through.
It was so hard to get through. And, you know, she was sitting there for a lot longer than you saw after having drawn that rock. And I felt frozen because I felt a bit of guilt, as did Hannah. After Jessica went home that way, we went back and Hannah was feeling really bad. And I was with her on Sunday and we were trying to like make Hannah feel better, even though I felt pretty bad too. There was no celebration going on other than what you saw in the confessionals with Zeke. I think he said Tribal was amazing. You know, mm-hmm. He was so happy that it worked out for him. But yeah, everybody was so respectful in that game to your face. Obviously, you know, confessionals, you can kind of vent and say whatever you say. But in terms of like how we related to each other, everybody just saw it for what it was. It's a game. A move was made. Maybe it was a move you wanted to happen. Maybe it wasn't. But let's all just be friends. And we had lots of conversations like that where we're just like, hey, good on you for that thing you did. Or, you know, let's just, but, you know, moving forward, you're going to keep playing your game and I'm going to keep playing mine. It's almost like, you know, the coyote and the sheepdog when they punch in the time clock for work and then they're mm-hmm. at each other's throats. And then 5 o'clock rolls around, they punch out and they're best of friends. It was kind of like that. People could really separate the game and the relationships. Not always, but for the most part.
What do you attribute that to?
I think that like, so I attribute it to the casting. I think they went after people who I think are just very respectful and nice. And I think I don't believe that there were really any villains in our cast. Mm-hmm. And I think that we were just all big fans of the game, most of us, certainly by that point in the game. And I think that, yeah, we just respected the game, saw it as a game, and we could compartmentalize our relationships and the gameplay.
Do you think that that is an evolution in the casting of the show, or do you think that that was just an anomaly for this season?
Well, I guess we'll have to see going forward.
And I don't think 34, you can really take it from that because, you know, the returning player seasons are, you know, traditionally seasons where there is a lot of bitterness and anger that comes from people knowing each other. Second chances, for the most part, was free of that. Still, some, you know, there's some stuff there. But 35, I guess, is going to be the ultimate reveal on this question.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, maybe this is an anomaly. And I think that because it was a theme that was generations, I think, you know, you're trying to have this tribe represents this generation and this tribe represents that generation. So if you do have villains in those, well, then it kind of muddies what you're saying about this group of people.
Yeah.
So I think it might just be an anomaly. And then, yeah, we'll see in 35.
Okay. So then following that, this is when Zeke looks like he is running things, that his side has the advantage, 5-4, seemingly. I think this episode also starts off with Zeke saying that he doesn't care so much about winning the game, that he's more excited about you losing the game.
Zeke, I love you. Like I said, we're going to run a Spartan race. We're good. But yeah, he was feeling really, really good about his position.
Did
at that
you
point.
Know that that's how he was feeling during the game?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, after that tribal, you know,
well, yeah, that tribal had started off. If I recall, that's the one where then he says to you, like, oh, you know, him and Brett are piling on, you know, hey, why don't you cry about it?
Yeah.
You know, right?
Yeah, that was that tribal. Yeah, you know, the thing that also,
a lot of the viewers were upset about that. I thought it was, you know, a quick thing. And I felt like that, you know, so I think it was Sunday who was like, all right, everybody settle down. But I got a lot of people who were very upset about that moment from the listeners.
Yeah, and I'm really grateful actually for this opportunity to be able to talk about that specific moment here, because I did say nothing on social media the night that episode aired. And, you know, we're not supposed to be on social media, and probably I could have said something and nothing would have happened.
And
but
just as a quick aside, I appreciate, you know, the people who are not, you know, giving the play by play during the season. It takes a lot of restraint, and it goes a long way in not, you know, spoiling the outcome of the show, but continue.
Yeah, no, I agree. As a fan myself, I always follow all the Survivor players, and I don't want to know what's coming or whatever. But in any case, so that particular tribal was a very long tribal. And yeah, there was a brief moment where maybe it seemed a little personal between Brett, Zeke, and myself. What you didn't see is that I was being very antagonistic at that tribal. I was trying to... one of the things I said was, I said, Jeff, I want everybody to empty their pockets one by one, and I want to see what's in them. Because I wanted Jay to show us his idol or Will. We were pretty sure that Will or Jay had an idol. And I was being very antagonistic, and I was trying to create a little chaos, and I was, you know, whispering to other people. I was trying to like make people unsure on the other side about who they were going to vote for. In the end, they ended up voting for exactly who they planned to. But I was being very antagonistic, and I think that that rubbed some people the wrong way, and maybe some things were said. But I mean, it was so brief. It was so brief, and I love Brett. He's an amazing guy. He was the funniest guy out there. I didn't want him anywhere near Final Three because he's so super likable. So that maybe you saw 5 seconds of unlikability, but it can't destroy like just how super likable Brett is. I love the guy. He and Sunday did just trick me onto a roller coaster in Vegas that went upside down, but otherwise, he's a great guy. And Zeke as well. We
get it. We get it. Everybody loves you. Everybody.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We left it all in Fiji. I understand. We're just talking about what happened on the show.
Sure, sure, sure.
No, there's no animosity, that's coming out of here. So this is now where Zeke is going to ultimately end up going home, but Will has this idea that he wants to put into play, and he went into this in, you know, great detail with Jordan of the pendulum strategy. And so that ultimately what he wants to do is he wants to take out starting with Zeke and then you and then Jay. But for this week, the pendulum strategy is going to benefit you.
Yes.
How active of a participant were you in recruiting Will? Or is it just like you hear word, hey, Will's going to vote with us on this, and great.
You saw the moment. There was some meeting on the other side happening on the beach, and I made a comment about it, and Will was just lying there, and he's like, you know, I'm ready to work with you. I'm like, whoa, oh my God, I cannot believe this. This is it. Like I think I said, it was like music to my ears. This is perfect. He's, you know, I'm finally like, I'm maybe I have the numbers again. And, unfortunately, I mean, it ended up not mattering, but, Ken didn't particularly trust Will, and he kind of gave him that test
it's time for your test, Will.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Adam, Hannah, and myself, we were all like, no, wait, you what? Will is already on our side. He's going to vote with us tonight. And so I know I pulled Will aside. I don't think it mattered what I said to him, but I said to him, like, look, you're going to have a vote. How are you going to vote? I hope you're going to vote with us. Like, we really do trust you. We want to work with you. And then I think he had a conversation with Adam as well. And I'm sure Hannah, but yeah, it that particular vote ended up working out for us for sure. And I, you know, Will felt, that due to his age, that he wasn't getting the respect that he felt he deserved. And I told him this after the game. I never would have told him this in the game, but I told him after the game that, you know, I guess I was a little ageist as well. I was never, ever going to throw $1 million at Will if he was in the final three, whether he deserved it or not. Mm-hmm. I feel like throwing $1 million at an 18-year-old would do like such damage. I'm 42 and I'm not even sure I could take it.
No.
So I was never going to give him $1 million, but I was so happy that he wanted to work with this. But of course, his pendulum strategy, he was going to swing back the other way. The mistake he made is that he didn't have a single conversation with me after that tribal that he voted with us. And I saw him sitting in a hammock with Jay, and I saw he had another conversation with Jay. So I thought, oh, he's totally flipping back. Like I saw that one coming. But great guy, much more mature than his 18 years show. And he probably could handle $1 million.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different conversation. You know, I think you were probably right the first time in terms of that. No 18-year-old, I don't think it's a good thing for them to be getting that kind of money, unless, you know, I guess you could probably set it up in some sort of annuity or a trust where they like are forced to be responsible with that money. But was the pendulum strategy, like, did everybody just, like, know about that? Like, was that a thing that was just floating about while you guys were out there? Or is this a thing that you learned about as you're watching the show?
He certainly had conversations about it, I think, with
But
Hannah.
The term is being thrown around when you're on the island.
You know, like, we talked a lot about, like, gameplay. And you know, initially when the game started, I hid the fact that I was such a super fan. But very quickly, you realize that you're surrounded by super fans. And you were able fairly openly to talk about the game. Certainly, any strategy you would leave with the people that you trusted, and you didn't want to share that with the people you didn't. But it was amazing how openly we all talked about the game. Adam was a much bigger super fan than I ever knew.
Super duper, even.
Super duper, like bigger than that. Yeah, I think I told him that we need a new word for the level of fan that he is. And so he was very smart to dial that back. But for the most part, we could all admit that, like, yeah, we've seen almost every season. I've seen every season, and I'm sure they did too. But it's not such a bad thing these days where the game is at to admit that you're a fan.
Yeah, I do think that probably a bad idea to name these operations. I think that it's the kind of thing where you can talk about a plan, but once you give it a name and then that name ends up getting passed around, I'm not saying that this is necessarily what happened to Will, but I think that if people hear, like, oh, the other side has a plan and it's called this, it's all of a sudden now it's like Rogue One, that everybody is like going out of their way, like, we have to stop the pendulum strategy before it gets us. It'll destroy us all.
No, good point. Good point.
So, yeah, don't name your plans on Survivor. Yeah. Just talk about them and then don't give them like a code name.
Yes, I agree. That's solid advice.
So where Will is going to end up coming back and vote with you, did you feel like he's 100% solid when you guys are going to that tribal council where Zeke goes home?
I did, until I heard about the conversation that he had with Ken. And at that point, I was not solid at all. And to Will's credit, he spoke so well at that tribal that for me at least, hard to know where he was going to land. I tried to appeal towards his need to have a resume and to make these big moves and to own these moves. And I felt like, you know, if he really did care about those things, that he would vote with us, but there was really no way to know. I wasn't sure until the votes got read.
Okay, so the votes are going to come against Zeke. Also, Adam is going to play his idol. And again, Will has a pretty good story about what he was doing in terms of writing on his parchment, which forced Adam to play the idol for him. Well, I'll talk to Adam very soon also, and we'll get his side of that story. So we get down now to the final eight following that, correct?
Yes, I believe that's right. I believe you did that math right.
So I'm interested to just talk a little bit about Adam. We haven't touched on him too much to this point, but what's your relationship like with Adam through this point in the game, who's now a, you know, solid ally on your side?
Yeah, Adam... God, the guy was flying under the radar the whole time. He played an amazing game, and I wasn't really worried about him, and I guess I should have been. I actually wrote him a note the other day that, you know, he happened to be in my casting finals, and in the casting finals, I remember having a thought that I'm like, oh, this is a guy I'm going to need to worry about, because he was really working the room in terms of, like, eye contact and trying to, you know, forge relationships with smiles. And I was doing the same, and I thought, okay, I got to worry about this guy. But then I got to the game, and I guess I just forgotten that I had that thought, and I wasn't worried about him at all, and I completely trusted him. The other thing that was really amazing about Adam is that he's probably the only person in the game that never lied to me. He would tell me to my face that he was not going to let me into Final Three, and God, that was like a really refreshing thing, you know, to have that. It's like, I just knew where he stood. And that was, of course, deeper in the game. But yeah, he was, I felt like I could trust him to a point. Again, I've said before, Ken was the only person I trusted 100%. Adam was playing just a great game. I felt I felt we had great conversations about the game, and we were working together. We had the same interests to a point, and then we saw, you know, we saw what happened. I thought the worst thing that was going to happen for me is that he, Adam, and I were going to have to go to a fire making challenge, and I felt great about my chances at making a fire because I've been doing it for so many days now.
Look at you.
Yeah. Yeah. It was amazing. So, and of course I thought I could trust Ken, but it didn't happen for that particular vote.
So the thing I had skipped over was during that tribal council or that episode where Zeke ends up going home. I believe that's also the family visit. And so you aren't on the full family visit, but you got to see your dad who came out there. And how much did that mean to you to get to see your dad out there?
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, I was a sobbing mess. And I think you've even talked about this. It's funny, at that point, it'd been, I think, 30 days. And yeah, you've been 30 days. I've gone that long without seeing my family before. But because you know that the people that you can, they're the only people you can trust, your family and your friends outside the game. And so, yeah, to see him just for those brief 10 minutes, it was just so great. And, you know, you could kind of forget about the game for a few minutes. And tried to win that challenge so bad. And I just got caught up in the ropes. And unfortunately, I didn't get to hang out more with my dad, but it was great.
Was your family supportive about you going on Survivor? Or did they think that this was just like a crazy thing to go and do?
Well, they definitely thought it was a crazy thing to go and do, but they were absolutely supportive. You know, they didn't try to discourage me from playing the game. And the fact is, my dad had, most of my family had never even seen a single episode of Survivor. And mm-hmm. I told him, like, hey, I'm going to play this game. It's really crazy. You want to watch it a little? I was like, no. I'm like, okay.
They didn't watch the show.
They didn't. Well, no, they watched my season, but they didn't watch.
They wouldn't watch it before you were on it.
Yeah. I mean, my mom did and my brother did. And I got my niece. I turned her into a super fan. And she generated her 61 rules of Survivor before I got out there. But, they hadn't, my dad's side especially didn't have a lot of knowledge about what Survivor was about.
And that's interesting, to me that they weren't like, really on top of what was going on in watching this, very iconic TV show, which has been around for so long. Were your parents supportive of your decision to go and be a TV writer when you first started to kick that idea around?
Yeah. I mean, my parents have always been super supportive of every like dream and goal that I've had. And I probably take that for granted too much. But yeah, as soon as I graduated college, I told them I wanted to come out to LA and try to, you know, get a career as a TV writer, and they like, yeah, do it. There was no hesitation on their part whatsoever. Completely supportive.
And what was this experience like for them watching the show? Were they just sort of like really, cause they're used to, you know, okay, you're doing something, but you know, you're not on camera. And then to have the opportunity to watch the show, I'm sure was probably, you know, really exciting.
Oh yeah, no, it was. And of course, you know, the funny thing is, you know, here we are on the West Coast and all my family and a significant number of friends are on the East Coast. And so, starting at 5 PM on Wednesdays, I just start getting all these, texts and, you know, obviously I don't get to see the episodes before they air. I don't know what's going to get shown. And so you get all these like these texts and it's like, you have no idea what they're talking about. Like, why did you do that? Like, well, do what? What are you talking about? I haven't seen it yet. But yeah, they were so super supportive and it was really exciting. And, it's brought me closer to some other members of my family than I had been before.
So going back to the game, then at the final eight, Will is going to be the person who goes out. I mean, did you guys in your alliance, was this all sort of like a foregone conclusion before the Zeke vote? All right, sure. He's going to vote with us. And then the next vote, we're going to turn around and vote out Will. Or did he sort of mishandle the way that he was going about his business?
I love you, Will. I think he mishandled the way he was going about his business. I don't think it was a foregone conclusion that he was next. Although I did want to get rid of him fairly early. The whole thing that went down with Z kind of messed up the order of the votes that I initially was hoping for. But in any case, certainly when he was not having conversations with me after having worked with us, and he was just hanging out with Jay so much, it was just so incredibly, you know, suspicious, and I just you just know then where he stands. And so he's the obvious next vote because you know you can't trust him. And so he went home.
Okay, so, and Jay is still out there. He still has his idol, and this is going to be something that's top of mind for you heading into this vote now coming up at the final seven. And you were interested, you wanted to put the votes on Brett, but still also try to flush the idol from Jay. Hannah talks you into putting the votes on Sunday, or is that a misrepresentation?
No, it's so funny. So what happened was Hannah came to me and she's like, so here's the plan. We're going to vote. We're going to split the votes between you and Jay. I'm like, what? That's a terrible plan, because I knew Jay had an idol and he'd shown such restraint in not playing it. But that's only going to last so long. And I'm sure that tonight he's going to play it. And so if he plays it, then I go home. And so I was like, and that's immediately where I knew where Hannah stood for sure. Like, I never completely trusted her, but in that moment, I'm like, okay, I clearly definitely cannot trust her, because she knows Jay's going to play his idol, or he might. And so then I'm going home and she's okay with that. And so I said, I pitched, I'm like, well, and of course I didn't tell her that I knew that, you know, you don't want to rattle them and like get them thinking that you're paranoid about them. But I said, well, let's do this. Let's vote out. Let's put the votes between Brett and Jay, because I'm worried that, yeah, Jay plays an idol. And if I'm on the other side of these votes, then I go home. So I pitched Brett and Jay, and I went to Adam and I sat down with him and I said, you know, I heard about this Jay David vote. I think that's not good for my game. And how about we do Brett and Jay? And he said he'd think about it. I was like, oh no, this is, at that point I thought I might be going home tonight. And I started getting a little emotional and I threatened Hannah. I'm like, I'm going to go rogue, which is like, yeah, what is that going to do? There's nothing that does, except, you know, mm-hmm. I just wanted to make people nervous, or make her nervous, so that, you know, she would feel uncertain about my trust in her at that point. And then I eventually started to calm down a bit. She came to me and she said, how about Jay and Sunday? And I'm like, at that point, I'm like, fine. I mean, yeah, I felt like Sunday had to go home anyway, so the order didn't matter as much, although it did make me nervous, because just everyone was in love with Brett, and it's like, if he ends up in final three, he could win. But whatever. At that point in the game, I'm like, okay, it had been between Jay and I, and now it's between Jay and Sunday, so fine, that'll work out.
It's part of the problem with having this likable group. You know, you start to talk yourself into reasons why everybody is going to win when they end up getting to the end of the game. You know, it's sort of like there's a lot of different outs you're looking at.
Yeah, and you know, Sunday really had a beautiful story that didn't make the air. I mean, she's a breast cancer survivor, and so I told her, it's true, you were a survivor before the game ever started, and she would have a great story to tell at Final Tribal. And you know, we talked about her cancer battle in the game. It just never made the air.
So did you have a final three that was in your mind? Were you trying to work your way to the end with Hannah and Ken?
Yeah, I wanted, those are the two people I wanted to sit next to at the end. And I really thought it was going to happen.
Yeah. But what did you do about Adam? I mean, did you tell Adam that you had a final three with him also?
Yeah. I mean, what I told Adam, you know, I forget exactly. Well, this was actually towards the end. I said, you know, Ken, he trusts me so much. There's no one that I trust more. He's going to side with me. So you and Hannah need to go after each other. That makes more sense. And that's when he says, like, well, no, that maybe that just gets me fourth. But, and yeah, obviously he ended up being right.
Yes. It's funny how that works out.
But, I said, you know, go after each other. Don't worry about me. I'm just this weirdo bald dude over here. Go after each other. But, mm-hmm. Any case, I know for Ken's game, I don't think that, you know, he really couldn't do anything at that point. He basically, I think, decided who won, but it wasn't going to be him, unfortunately, for his game at that point.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get there. We'll get there.
We're almost there.
All right. So this is a good thing. Sunday goes home. Jay plays his idol. You don't get voted out. And then you get down to the six. And this is the point where you know, I was so impressed with what you did here, where you're saying, okay, I need to make this fake idol, and then I'm going to be able to dupe Jay into thinking he has the idol, and then he won't go and either find the real one or there is no real one. Now, Adam ultimately is going to find the real one at the final five. Did you feel like that Jay's idol would be rehidden, or did you feel like that I'm just going to make a fake idol to make him have a false sense of security and that idol is out of the game?
The truth is, I was shocked. I, you know, and you probably know these numbers. I certainly don't. But I thought there were just so many idols in this season, and I felt like the likelihood of an idol was... I didn't think it was likely, but I did. You know, I had this idea to plant an idol before the game started, and of course I'm not the first. Mm-hmm. It was something I wanted to do. It was kind of a survivor goal of mine, and I thought, yeah, you know, if perchance there are idols in the game, this would, if someone finds it, and I hit it in a fairly obvious location, it would prevent someone from looking. And but mainly, you know, I also thought I never thought I would last as long as I did. And I had this kind of fantasy too of, well, if I do get voted out, I'm going to leave this ghost in the game, right? And I'm going to still from the grave have like an impact on the events.
But in terms of the real idol,
yeah,
did you think that there was a real idol in the game at that point? Or did you feel like that you were so golden in where you were that you didn't need it?
I thought there was a chance, and we actually all did go looking for one. Mm-hmm. And then it became clear that Adam had found it. He just had such a smile on his face. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's funny that idol that I made, you know, you probably saw the paintbrushes and stuff. And I was so exhausted at that point in the game that and it was dark, that I buried all that. But it was just because I was so tired, I didn't bury it that well. And actually Jay and Adam saw these like two paintbrushes sticking out of the sand, and they started like digging, and then like, you know, I think they got even physical. And so I thought that when I heard about that, I thought, oh, well then probably
the jig is up.
Yeah. And like my fake idol is not going to work. People are still going to now scramble because they're going to realize that it's fake. But if fortunately or not, Jay never didn't put that together.
How many people knew that you had made the fake idol? Did you keep it to yourself?
When I had threatened to go rogue, when I was wigging out emotionally, I had told Hannah that it was a plan I had, and I even showed her the pieces, some of them. And, she apparently went and I think told Brett or someone, because I know maybe she told Adam, because I know Brett found out about it too, and he had a pretty close bond with Adam. That's probably the trait.
So what is this speech? I'm going rogue and I'm going to make fake idols. You'll see.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was so stupid. But I was trying to create like all this uncertainty in other people's minds, or at least in Hannah's, so it, like it would like kind of swing her back my way. And in fact, when Jay did play the idol, the fake one, Hannah said, David. And initially I felt, oh, that's bad. But then I thought, oh, that's actually kind of good. And the jury can hear that and I'll get credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
But any case, there was nothing really to be gained by going rogue, because it's not really an option.
So you made the fake idol. Jay finds it. You know, you have this great look on your face. It's a great moment where that's happening in the episode, and he's like, oh, these idiots. I forget what he's saying, but he's like bragging about,
I think, train of losers is what he's saying.
Yeah. You know, I'm so smart because I found the idol. And then you also get one over on him when you go to the challenge, where you're going to, for immunity and reward, have to, there's like a puzzle, and he's actually very, combination lock, and he gets the combination right. But there's like this little like blinds that you could put down, and he doesn't cover his number. And you have the idea of like, hey, everybody, let's go steal his number. And eventually you get it after, you know, a couple of different tries, you get through it. And then you put together, what is it, an owl?
No, it was a bat.
A bat. Yeah. And you put together this puzzle. Finally, a puzzle has been put together, and all of your puzzle prep was done of your 3D printing.
That's right.
That you've been doing. I recall that you had said in the resume for the show or the profile that you do 3D puzzle printing as a hobby. Was that something just to get ready for Survivor? That's something you do when you're not even playing Survivor?
Well, I've always been into 3D and modeling, 3D modeling with Maya. It's like the software like Pixar uses and everything.
Yeah.
And so I've always been interested in that and played around with that. But I did buy the 3D printer specifically for my audition tape. Because I did want to recreate the puzzles and put them in the tape and you know, commit them to memory and maybe because the tree puzzle, that's one of the ones I did that's recurred, and I thought, well, maybe there's a chance, and that one I can solve, and like, well, I shouldn't even be talking about this, but I can solve that one very quickly.
Okay, so if the tree puzzle comes up, you're good.
Yeah.
So you ultimately get that, and now here comes Jay with Adam's reward steal. And he says, hey, I want to use this and steal the reward. But he still gets to bring you. So this was great. You didn't have to pick favorites or anything like that.
Yeah. Which was great for me. But and the fact that he took me and I still got to eat. And also the other option was, I can't remember if this made the air or not. Probably not. Where you can either go on this reward and eat all this food. Or Jeff's like, or... you know, removes the napkin. Everybody gets one bite of this steak, and of course, you know, it's like, well, I mean, I let some people think that I was actually considering letting them have a bite of the steak, but there's no way I was going to go on that reward.
All right, so you had a choice before Jay comes in with the reward steal.
Yeah.
To do go and sit down, or everybody gets a bite of this.
In fact, that's the moment. Jeff is like, okay, everybody gets a bite of steak, or David picked two people to go on the reward. I'm like, oh man, why didn't I see this coming? And then before I could say anything after that, that's when Jay said, Jeff. I'm like, oh, thank God, this is great. And Jay is just so damn good at every aspect of Survivor. He's maybe one of the best. And so, for that reward, he didn't cover his numbers, but he was just so fast at everything. If he had just covered his numbers, then he's the one wearing that necklace without question. But he's also so respectful. And he's not a dirty guy. He just like, he felt that I deserve the win because I won, even though I wouldn't have done it without him. But so we go on that reward, and he makes this pitch to us that use
you and Jay and Adam.
Exactly. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. That's right. And he makes this pitch like, use me as a shield. And I considered it. I don't think Adam was ever going to be on board with it. And it would have been really interesting. I wish we had done it. And it would have been really cool if I did find myself maybe sitting next to Jay at a final three, and there was some talk that maybe the votes would have been tied, and we would have seen the result of that for the first time, how they deal with the tie. We all speculated about
now,
how
is that
do.
With Adam as well?
That would probably be me. We'd needed Adam, but it would have been that final three probably would have been me and Ken and Jay.
You and Ken and Jay, and yeah. You think it would have been a 5-5 split?
Yeah.
I think the one that gets really tricky is, what is it when it's you and Adam and Jay?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. And who knows? That would have been fascinating as well. We all talked about like what happens in a tie.
That's the one you could do a whole podcast on, what ultimately happens in that in that final three scenario.
Yeah, no, for sure. Of course, it didn't work out that way for Jay or myself.
Okay, so then you guys go to Tribal that night, and then Jay is going to be voted out. I mean, for you, that you would have voted out Brett at that spot?
Voted out Brett at that spot?
Yeah, at the final six.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was more about...
But it was Adam's call, basically.
Yeah.
Wouldn't turn his key.
Well, I mean, I was actually at that point, I was making a pitch to get rid of Adam.
Yeah.
Because he was being so honest with me about not wanting to take me to the final three. And I'm like, well, okay, it's not going to... My path isn't going to work with him now. So I made a pitch to Ken and Hannah to get rid of Adam. They didn't want to do that. I'm not sure... whether that was as a result of a conversation they had with Adam or a result of their own game aspirations. But in any case, it ended up being that Jay played his idol
fake idol.
Yeah, he played the fake idol, yeah. And then, of course, that was the end.
In terms of Adam and what he's doing and this idea of being, brutally honest about things, of course, it works for him. but I don't want to be results oriented. Do you think that that is the right strategy? Should more people be practicing that in Survivor, or only Adam could pull that off?
You know, I think that it really just depends. The problem with the tricky thing about this game is that like certain moves will work at one time and they won't work another time because it's just so dependent on the people that you're playing the game with. For his game, I think it did work out. He could play the game again and try that same strategy and, you know, completely bomb. And of course, being a winner, it is an even bigger target on
because it is the kind of thing when it doesn't work out, then it's a very easy thing for the podcasts and the blogs to say, "You idiot, why did you tell that person you were voting them out?" Because then they were able to turn it on you. You never do that. You never tell the person who's getting voted out, because the Monday morning quarterbacking on the Survivor community is fierce.
Yes, yes, it is. It is. And that's okay. And, you know, it should be. It's fun. With my game, too, there's a great example where I played the I told Ken that I had an idol and he told nobody. He really did keep that to himself. And I told Zeke I had an idol and he told everybody. So there, that's the same move, but it just matters who you tell. It's just so dependent on the players that you trust or don't.
Okay. So at the final five, this is the point when you decide and Ken is going to win the immunity and he's going to have his legacy advantage here. But you say, okay, you know what? If we're just going to vote out Adam anyway at four, why not vote him out at five?
Exactly. Yeah, I said that the order didn't matter. I met resistance to that. And
who's resisting, Hannah?
I want to say it was Hannah. Yeah, I'm sure it was. Because I think actually, you know, if I can trust Ken after the game, and I think I can, he told me that his decision to get rid of me actually happened in the afternoon, the night of the day I went home. And so I think that he probably would have been okay with voting out Adam. So I'm sure it was resistance on Hannah's part and the relationship that she had with him. But in any case, it wasn't meant to be.
So this is when Adam goes off and he has the idol. Now, in the episode, it looked as though Adam has this conversation with Hannah and he tells her that he has the idol. And then she comes back and reports it to you guys. We don't see that on screen, but she says in confessional that she'll be the one deciding who's going to be the person who goes home. But you're saying that everybody knew Adam had the idol based on, or you knew Adam had the idol based on how he was acting?
I knew. Well, Hannah told me, but I also saw the look on Adam's face when he was coming back from the beach. And I actually thought I saw something in his back pocket, but I think I had a conversation with him after the game. He said it wasn't in his back pocket. But in any case, yeah, it was very obvious that Adam had an idol. And of course, I didn't know that he had the conversation or relationship that he had with Brett. But he told Brett. He showed Brett.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, lucky him. If I had only found that damn thing.
Yeah. Although, does it help you that much? I guess that if you get Adam out at that point, yeah, I guess it probably does. I guess it's pretty good.
Yeah, it might have helped.
It might have helped. It might have helped. But who knows? But so that Hannah ends up telling you what? Hey, that Adam has the idol. We need to put the votes on Brett.
Yeah, and I was great with that. And you know, I don't think that was the best move for her game.
Would have been?
I think voting out me would have been a better move. Of course, for her, it didn't matter. She still made it to final three regardless. I think that Hannah doesn't get enough credit for the game that she played. And I think that, and she's talked about this as well, where she's so wickedly smart. She's also wickedly goofy. And I think that a lot of people only saw the goofy side of her. And certainly I had many conversations about strategy with her on the beaches, just her and I knew how smart she was, but I think she was trying to present this goofy side so that she was a non-threat. But I think that the result of that is people don't realize the great game that you're playing. And so when she did, or go along or, you know, vote out Brett on that vote, I think that, it painted her in a way that she just wasn't going to escape, even at, you know, at Final Tribal, regardless of, like, she gave a really great speeches at that Final Tribal, but it just, I think it's just a little late.
Okay. So we get to this point now where we're down to the last four. And so you're headed into this immunity challenge. Do you feel like going into it that you need to win immunity to stay in the game?
I got asked about that in a confessional. I said, I don't think I need to win immunity.
Yes. You just felt like, okay, my team is locked and Adam is going home. Adam needs to win immunity.
Yeah. Well, I didn't actually think that Adam was necessarily going home. I just felt that Ken was never going to betray me. And so that it would go to a fire making challenge between Adam and myself. And that, yes, Adam then would go home because I felt like I could make fire faster than he could. But so I thought I tried to win that immunity challenge, but I when I saw Ken win, I'm like, oh, this is great. This is great for me. I'm probably going to be in final three now.
Okay.
And it wasn't meant to be.
So as that day is going on, are you sensing that something is amiss in terms of conversations that Ken is having?
Well, I mean, you know, we got back from that immunity challenge and Ken said, you know, he was going to do what he always does and he's going to go fish. And of course, Adam and Hannah both like, oh, I'll go with you. Mm-hmm. And so everyone was wearing on their sleeves, except for Ken, what their plans were, what their motivations were. Like, I knew Hannah, I didn't have her at that point anymore. I knew I didn't have Adam anymore. He'd always been honest with me about it. And, but I felt I had Ken. So I saw in that particular conversation, Ken or Hannah won Ken chose her to go fishing with, and they had the conversation they had. And then I had the conversation with Adam saying, like, you and Hannah should go after each other. But yeah, I did not sense that I needed to worry about Ken. And, except when we got to tribal and about 30 seconds in, I don't remember specifically what was said, but it was just kind of the conversation. I could tell that it was not going to go my way.
Now, going back to Hannah, did you feel like it was a betrayal from Hannah to be voting against you at that tribal council?
No, and it did not feel like a betrayal because I never trusted her 100%. So I figured this was going to come at some point. Truly, again, yeah, it was only Ken who I trusted 100%. And I didn't even feel bad about him or towards him when he did that. I was surprised and it was unexpected, but I didn't blame him.
Okay, so Ken's decision to make this move, he would say at the Final Tribal Council like that this was his move that he decided on. It wasn't Adam's move, that Adam got him to ultimately make that flip. How do you see it?
I think like more than one person can own a move. I think I wasn't there for any of the conversations that Ken and Adam had about me. So then truthfully, they would have a better perspective on whose move it really was. But, I think that, you know, it's going to look more like a Ken move in the sense that here's the guy that, you know, you maybe manipulated into thinking you could trust 100%. And then you at the end vote him out and there you are in final three. But I mean, I think, you know, Adam was having the conversations he was having with him and I think he gets ownership of that move as well. So, I'm sorry, I can't illuminate whose move or who deserves the most credit for that particular move. In the end, it probably doesn't even matter much.
Were you able to have a conversation with Ken about where his head was at before you went to tribal council?
I did. So that was two things. I should back up a little bit. The morning of the immunity challenge, Ken and I had this kind of really sweet moment on the beach, almost like the one that he had with Hannah watching the sun come up.
Wow. And
yeah. And he hugged me and he told me that he was absolutely going to take me to final three. And I think in that moment, he maybe was. And so then after the immunity challenge, the conversation I had with him, this is the play I made, probably wasn't a good one. I did not want to aggressively question him where his mm-hmm. head was at, because I felt that that would say to him, well, wait, this guy I'm loyal with and he doesn't even trust me. Why should I be loyal with him? That was the math I was doing in my head.
Right. And that's certainly understandable because, you know, that there have been points in the game previously where, you know, he wants to be spoken to a particular way, that he's sort of voiced that concern of the people that he trusts. And so it's hard to have like a short, important conversation with Ken.
Yeah, it's true. And I thought that was my best play. And again, we had that nice moment in the morning. So I felt really great about my position going into tribal.
Do you feel like if you would have had that conversation that it could have potentially changed anything?
I actually had a conversation with Ken about that an hour after the game was over for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I said, is there anything I could have said to you and you would have let me into Final Three? And he mm-hmm. said, no, it was about his daughter. And then loyalty he had for her. And so that makes me feel good. Who knows whether it's true? It's impossible to know. But I feel like I got as far as I possibly could have given the game I played.
Mm-hmm. Does he feel like that there was it ultimately didn't make a difference in terms of, you know, he's going to get no votes against Adam? Or does he think he would have potentially done better with you in the final tribal council?
I don't think he thinks he would have done better with me. I mean, the truth is, this didn't make the live reunion show, but Jeff polled the jury and they said, if David's sitting at final tribal, does he win? And it was unanimous that I did. Mm. And so that it just wouldn't have mattered for Ken's game or the end results. And so, yeah, that's where we're at.
Yeah. All right. So ultimately the votes come up. And you think worst case scenario is I'm going to make a fire and the votes come up, you know, three votes, David, and you're voted out.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And you know, before the votes were read, I could tell it was going to be me. And I'd even like rearranged my things, my bag and my coat so that I could just really quickly pick them up because I'm like, I don't want it that long, like, you know, walk out the door looking at my back. And mm-hmm. So, yeah. And so I was prepared for it and surprised, but prepared. And it was just honestly the thing that nobody believes me about, but it's true. I really did feel relieved when I got voted out. I definitely tried to win. I tried to make it into Final Three. I didn't not try, but I felt incredible relief. Felt like I'd undergone so much personal growth that to throw $1 million on top of that would have done damage to it.
And but you felt that immediately when you came out of the game, that sense of relief of that I don't have to have $1 million, that burden.
I felt it walking down the ramp as tribal council's at my back. Yeah, it was a relief. And you know, now if I were to be asked back, I think I'm ready for the $1 million.
You're ready for the money. Yeah.
I think I could take it, but I think it's ultimately a good thing that I didn't make it.
Cause I can empathize with, you know, my own personal going to day 38 experience and then coming out of the game and just being like, okay, well, that was fun. That was a really good time. I don't know if I was like, if the money was ever a real thing in my mind, but just like just being very content with the game that I played. I've talked about how, you know, I had a much harder time coming to terms with the time I went back and didn't get nearly as close to the money.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was able to walk away from, you know, day 38 being like, you know, well, that was, you know, that was a good effort out there.
Yeah. Well, you played amazingly your first game.
David.
You did. You did.
Come on.
You really did.
Come on.
And it's too bad they didn't have final threes then. You'd be a winner. The money, the experience is so much more valuable than the money. Mm-hmm. And the money's great, but that's the thing too. It's like the money wasn't a huge motivator for me. I just wanted the experience. I love this game so much. And to get as far as I did when I thought I was going to get voted out first, I really got everything I needed out of it.
Okay. So you ultimately go back to the Ponderosa And, you know, I haven't watched your Ponderosa video yet. I wish I would have. Why? Why do you say please don't?
No, I get so embarrassed by all that stuff. I don't know. I feel.
What are you embarrassed about?
I mean, I don't think there's anything in that Ponderosa that I do need to be embarrassed about. But I hate, like, once the game is over and like talking about myself. It's like this makes me so uncomfortable. But yeah, no, there's nothing in there that I really need to worry about. But and by the way, the production on the Ponderosa's videos is just amazing these days. Yeah.
Is it James Seal?
Yeah. I kind of, I'm saying that, or you're saying it right. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and his wife.
Yeah, great job on the Ponderosa stuff. And so you're getting ready to go and participate in the final tribal council. What's the mood at Ponderosa? Is it feeling like Adam's got this in the bag, or are there questions to be determined at the final tribal?
For the most part, not that we all openly said, I'm going to vote for this person, I'm going to vote for that person, but you got, and maybe they did, by the way, because I'd only been there for a night. Mm-hmm. And you know, there wasn't a ton of conversation the day of the tribal. Everybody was like getting ready and eating mm-hmm. and whatever. But in any case, for what I witnessed and what I saw, it seemed likely that Adam was going to win. It was not completely known whether or not it would be a sweep, as it turned out to be, but I think everybody, for the most part, walked in there with a plan to vote Adam.
Did Hannah or Ken have an advocate at the Ponderosa that was sort of at least trying to campaign at least a little bit for them?
Not that I heard, and I wish that I had spoken up a little bit more. I was still just kind of, even though I felt relief, I was kind of in a daze. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just like, whoa, where am I? What just happened? And again, there wasn't a lot of conversation that I was a part of because I was there for such a brief amount of time. Had I been there longer, I would have regained the physical and mental state to campaign for people. But the truth is, I felt Adam played the best game. I felt that in a way, when I wrote his name down, I kind of felt like I was voting for myself because he found two idols. He played one of them for another person, and I felt like as I did, I felt like I was voting for myself. I was voting for the same game, or at least a similar one.
Who was the loudest advocate for Adam?
I there just wasn't that much conversation I was mm-hmm. a part of in terms of anybody like campaigning for anyone. What I remember most is stepping off that boat and sitting down in front of a steak and a chicken or something, and everybody lying to me about what they did for a living.
Yeah, I've seen some of the other ones. Was there anything memorable?
Yeah, Chris, and I actually believed this. I'm going to sound so stupid, but Chris told me that he was a rodeo clown. Yeah, and they didn't. Brett didn't lie. Brett told the truth because his truth is better than any lie. Mm-hmm. And I think somebody volunteered that Jay was part of some kind of CIA operation, and mm-hmm. I barely heard that, so I was like, "What is happening?" And then of course everyone's like, "Well, we're lying to you." I'm like, "Oh," and they said Sunday said she was a professional poker player, which I believed. I'm like, "Oh, I could see that, sure." Yeah. and Michelle said that I believe they said Michelle was a stripper, and I'm like, "I could see that too."
Wow. Okay, that gets you in trouble.
Oh yeah, no, I mean,
she had a good one earlier in the season where I forget who came in, and she came through. Well, I said I was doing missionary work, but I'm actually a prostitute.
Oh God. Yeah, exactly.
Really?
Well, the thing is, I mean, I saw her dance before, and I'm like, she dances incredibly. So I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. I can buy that.
Okay.
Not the prostitution. I meant the stripper.
So, yeah. So the final tribal council, I mean, it was not too heated of an affair that we got nothing close to a Sue Hawk type speech. Who was the hardest on those three?
Oh boy, they got a grilling by a number of people. That tribal lasted, I think it had to have been close to 4 hours or something. And you know, I'd just been voted out of the game, and I had like no meat on my butt, and so I was really uncomfortable. And at a certain point, I just kind of tuned out what anybody was saying. All I mm-hmm. wanted, I just wanted it to be over. Yeah, there was some grilling, some of which you saw, some of which you didn't, and it. I did not envy anybody sitting up there.
How much weight did you lose while you were on the show?
I only lost 10 pounds. I thought I would lose a lot more. I put on 6 pounds before the game started, mm-hmm. so I'd have it to lose. But yeah, by day 38, I only lost 10 pounds. Of course, I was part of so many food rewards that had a lot to do with it. And of course, Ken was feeding us, and so was Jay and Paul.
Anything else from the final tribal council that you want to touch on?
No, I mean, it's... It was just so weird to be sitting there and, you know, it was just so moving when Adam, brought up his mom and
you had no idea at that point, right?
I actually,
or Fred Ponderosa.
I actually knew before the game was over.
Okay.
Inside the game, I knew about Adam's mom. He had told Jay and he had also, I believe, told Ken. Ken told me. And, I was never, ever going to, mention that Hannah didn't know. I didn't tell Hannah. I just didn't want to, it's just some things that belong in the game for other players and some things that don't. And I just don't think anybody, should have invoked Adam's mom or his situation. And it's not why he won. He won because he deserved to win. And so he gets to bring it up. I have no problem with. It's his story. But in terms of anybody else using that as a tool to get rid of Adam, it's just, you can't do that. I don't agree with that. And so, yeah, I knew about it, but hearing him say it to me, in that moment at Final Tribal is so incredibly moving. And I'm so happy that he got to say goodbye to her. He got there in time to say goodbye.
Did the whole cast find out soon after it happened? Like, were you guys all in communication, like, right after the game?
A lot of people did. We were all part of this GroupMe chat, but I somehow got like left out of it. So I found out, I think, days later, and I was Googling and I stumbled upon it. And then I reached out to people. I'm like, hey, just so you know, Adam's mom passed away. And then they're like, yeah, duh. I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm the only one that doesn't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's we're all still part of this GroupMe and we're all for the most part in touch. It's nice.
I wonder if that's maybe part of the reason that the cast ends up being as close as it ends up being, that you guys, you know, you go play this game and then, you know, you have somebody who everybody, you know, deeply cares for, who experiences this tragedy. And it's something that's sort of like, you know, outside of the scope of the game that ends up like sort of being something that's really a bond that, you know, everybody ends up going through together.
Yeah, I think that's really true. I do. Yeah. And it's such like, God, it's like he won and he's putting all this money towards, you know, towards beating cancer. And it's like, yeah, I mean, like it's awesome. I'm so happy he won. And so, yeah. And I think it has.
You didn't have any good plans like that.
I was going to maybe buy a house.
Yeah.
That changes nobody's life.
Nobody.
Not even mine.
How was the adjustment for you to get back to real life?
I got back. And I was walking around my neighborhood in a daze, mm-hmm. and it was a real adjustment. I definitely, it sounds silly to talk about this experience and PTSD, but I really did have it. Like I had,
it's a thing.
Yeah, it's a real thing. I had triggers. I had trust issues. And I think here we are, you know, 6-7 months out, and I think I'm finally back to the person I was before the game.
Yeah.
But you know, the other thing too, it gave me, in addition to all the growth I had, it gave me an appreciation for things like music. It just sounded so great right after I got out of the game and I could listen to it again. And it was just, anyway, now I'm like back to being desensitized to all those beautiful things of life. But so I guess I'll have to go back out there.
Yeah. There is something about it, just like the, sensory deprivation that goes on, that there was a magazine in the back of like, oh, the helicopter that we flew in at like the end of the game. And it was like, oh my God, look at this. Can you believe this? Like, look at this color. Like, it's real. It's a magazine.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it does weird things to you. Let me ask you some questions from the listeners about this. And, Edward Morris wants to know, what was the worst part of the experience for you? And he says, aside from not winning. I don't think that was the worst part.
No, not at all. No, not at all. Yeah, the worst part, certainly, probably a lot of people say this, but it was really being away from family and friends and just having that trust that can't exist inside a game about.
Do you have a lot of friends?
I do. Yeah, I hope.
Because I don't.
Okay. I'm sure that's not true, Rob.
It is.
yeah, I have a lot of friends, out here and back where I grew up. Those relationships and friendships are really important to me. And to be without those for 38, well, really 7 weeks, actually, it's the most difficult part of the experience.
Are most of your friends writers?
I certainly have a lot of people that work in the entertainment industry. They're not all writers. A lot of them are, but yeah, they're all different professions.
John Johnston wants to know, what did you do to learn to make fake idols? Was that just a skill set that you had, or was that something that you practiced before you went out there?
I did not practice it before I went out there, but I will say that that was not the first fake idol I tried to create inside that game. The first one was quite poor. It was like this really crappy piece of coral and some shabby strings falling apart. Because I was so desperate. This is at the beginning of the game. I was going to try to trick people that I had an idol because I thought for sure they were voting me out. And that's when I was just in tears. That's the other thing too. I feel so protected by the edit. I cried so much more than you actually saw.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the fake idol, it took a while. It took 2 nights. I stole the shell from the reward challenge with the swimming pool, and I gathered all those beads and stuff from different things.
Renee Herrera wants to ask you, David had a bandage on his knee for most of the game. What happened?
Oh, it just from, I got injured all the time in challenges, and I had a open wound in my knee there that looked like it was getting infected. And I'm surprised she didn't even ask me about my face. My face was just like oozing pus constantly.
Yes. Well, what happened there?
That was, I'm 42 and I should have known this, but the importance of hygiene and bathing in a game like Survivor, it's paramount. And I just stopped. I stopped for weeks. I just wasn't bathing at all. I know that's disgusting.
Yeah. So what happened?
So basically, my beard hairs got, some of them were ingrown, and there's just so much dirt on my face that I just got infections. Mm. And they just, it was just so gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, bathe, everybody. You should definitely bathe.
It's a good lesson. It's a good lesson. Jessica Frey wants to know, did you tell anyone that you wrote for TV? Did you have a fake occupation?
Going in, I thought, I should probably lie that I write for television because who wants to give $1 million to like a quote-unquote Hollywood TV writer? But then I changed my mind. And so when the game started, I was completely honest because I thought, well, one of the most important things is to make bonds and connections with people. And maybe saying that I wrote for Family Guy, which is the truth, would be something that people would want to talk about and learn more about. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, look, now I have a friend. So yeah, I never lied about my occupation. I did lie about how big a fan I was at first, but that was it.
Have you had any sort of resistance or pushback from other people that are in the industry in terms of being a writer for scripted and then being a participant on a reality TV show?
Not that I've read. I'm sure if I were to go online, I could probably find some. No.
But even among your peers, in real life.
Oh, no, not at all. No, everyone's been completely supportive. I worried that me being a writer would have hurt my chances of even being cast.
Mm-hmm.
And I even brought that up with casting and they said, well, you're the first. I'm like, actually, I don't think I am. I think Penner was a writer before he played the game. But I guess they saw him more.
That's right.
I love that.
That's right. Don't forget.
Exactly. Yeah. But
my man opens up this Friday. Go see it.
Yeah. So there was no pushback at all. I love that. I love your impressions.
No, thank you. Thank you, David. So then Adam Ritta wants to know, did competing on a season with this theme change the way you thought about your own generation or millennials? That you were somebody who talked quite a bit in the show about, I'm a Generation Xer, and that means you never give up. And you spoke quite a bit about what it meant to be a Generation Xer. And I was curious, were those actual thoughts, or were those things that as a writer, you thought, okay, they're definitely going to want this stuff, so let me try to talk and talk about the theme in a way that I know will be good for the show?
Yeah, I didn't, no plans to try to get like more screen time or say things that they wanted me to say or anything like that. But I do think that, yeah, there's some revisionist history in terms of like what it means to be a Gen Xer. Cause we're supposed to be the slacker generation. We're not the hardworking generation,
right.
But I think what happens is basically it's a theme about old versus young, and the old people are always going to feel like they're working harder than the younger people. And so that's kind of where that came from. But you know, I will say that having hung out with so many of these millennials and connected with so many of them, I feel great about the future. And I do think that really every generation gets a little bit better than the one before it.
Yeah. Was it odd for you to be considered an old person, like in, at least in terms of the theme of the game? Because I think that you see yourself, as I do, as somebody who is a kid. But now here you are presented as, here's one of the old guys.
Yeah, it's odd. I don't know. I don't think I'll ever feel like I'm an adult male, like a man. I don't think I'll ever get there. So yeah,
I hear you.
And so now I'm out there and it's like, yeah, I'm part of the old generation and these damn kids. Right. But yeah, it was an odd feeling.
And just to echo your thoughts, I know that we all made fun of the idea of millennials quite a bit. But there's a lot of things, to be excited about the younger generation that's coming up and a lot of the advances that, we've made in terms of technology and the way they see the world that I think are very exciting.
Oh, me too. I am like all in on the millennials. Yeah, I completely support that generation. Not that I want to crap on my own, but yeah.
No, like, there's good and bad. Let's not get carried away, David.
Exactly, exactly.
Stephanie Bourgeois wants to know that anxiety is often misunderstood by those who don't suffer. What message would you like to share for those who might not understand what it's like? And any advice for those who struggle with anxiety?
Yeah, I mean, like for me, I let my anxiety just kind of get in the way of living my life. And I think you just need, in however you can find the energy to do it, you do need to put in energy into fighting your anxiety and living your life despite like this voice in your head saying, don't leave your apartment. And as far as people who don't have it, understanding, I definitely think that people need to be more accepting and a little more tolerant of people who do have anxiety. And I get that it can come across sometimes as annoying to people who don't have it because they just can't relate to it. But it's a real thing. And before I've had many panic attacks, but before I had my first one, I knew about them, but you just don't really know about them until you've had one. And so yeah, it's going forward, I think actually people are becoming more accepting of these kinds of issues. But so yeah, that's a good message to get out there.
Did you experience a panic attack when you were on Survivor?
I thought I would. I thought for sure I would. Leading up to it, yeah. but once I got on the plane and was headed to Fiji, and again, I thought I would have a panic attack there. I never once had one. And I'm like, I think it's because I felt like, well, this has been a dream of mine to play this game. And so this is the right decision, despite all the scary things about it. This for me is the right decision. And I said this in another podcast that it was kind of like a Hail Mary for me to play this game and to face all these fears that I have because I had spent so much time just sitting on my couch.
And so since you've come back, have you had panic attacks? Have you had less panic attacks than you had before?
Well, as soon as I got back, I was in a really good place in terms of my anxiety. I felt really great. And then, as it got closer to September and the show was about to premiere, I would start having real anxiety on Tuesday mornings that would last till 9 p.m. Wednesday. And, but now that all that's behind me, I'm back to kind of being where I was at the end of the game. And, much better. You can't like remove anxious thoughts that you have. But you can, put energy towards not giving into them.
So short of being on Survivor, what can you do to manage that?
Yeah. I mean, one thing you can do is you can, for me, it's been very helpful. I see a therapist once a week, and just to be able to talk about openly about what your struggles are, what's going on in your head, so that you don't feel so alone. And then, so you feel like you're taking active steps to try to control it and, not have anxiety be the dictator in your life.
Jeff made a comment during the season where he was talking about, I think it was before the swap. He's like, in this game, you can go, you can go to the gym and work out, and you can do so, you know, you could learn how to survive, or you can go talk to a therapist. Do you feel like that is a skill that helps you in Survivor, talking to a therapist?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't doing it before Survivor. I'm now putting all this energy into making myself a better person and not succumbing to all that. But I think that, yeah, that could only help someone's game for sure.
Okay. I saw a picture of you recently posted on Instagram where you were with the great George Takei.
Yeah, that's right.
How did that happen?
You know, one of my first writing job was on this show called Super Ninjas for Nickelodeon, and he was a cast member on it. And so we all had, there's this big Super Ninjas reunion this past Saturday or Sunday. And George was there, and such a great guy. And I love that he's found this career that exists now
outside
of Star Trek. Yeah. And I'm a big Star Trek fan. So I love the guy.
Yes. What's your favorite Star Trek?
My favorite Star Trek is the original series.
Yes.
And it's the best episode of maybe television ever. It's called City on the Edge of Forever. And everyone should.
Joan Collins.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, everyone should watch it.
Okay. Lisa wants to know, how much did David milk his helplessness, if at all? Was it more of a liability or an asset? Did you ever really try to accentuate any of the issues that you were having out there?
I didn't have to accentuate. They happened on their own. I mean, honestly, it really hurt my game. It hurt and helped my game. It did endear myself to other people, but it did hurt my game in that I was really annoying people because I was screaming constantly when birds would, you know, come rush up to us or, you know,
run through the fire.
Yeah. Yeah. I everything scared me and I just wore it on my sleeve. And so, yeah, it endeared myself, but it also annoyed a bunch of people. So, you know, who knows, but no, I didn't have to, make anything up.
And then Steve Chung wants to know, David, as a super duper fan, you must have really prepared thoroughly to be on the show. What preparation was worthwhile and what do you wish that you did prior to getting on the island that would have helped more?
Well, this is probably obvious to everyone. You know, I took swimming lessons before this show began or before I went out there about a month before. Turns out a month is not long enough to learn how to swim. And so for me specifically, I would have spent more time in improving my physical ability. Because, you know, going out there are going to be swim challenges. So I would say, generally speaking, if there's anything that you feel that you're not good at, that you know is going to show up in Survivor, that's where you should be putting your energy so that you can be an asset to your tribe. Because if you have nothing to offer your tribe, especially when it is pre-merge, you're going to go home.
All right, David, what's next for you?
What's next? So, yeah, I'm waiting to hear on this animated pilot that my writing partner and I did with Rhys Darby for TBS. We'll know in a few months whether or not it gets picked up for series. Other than that, going out for staffing this season, looking for another gig. And I don't know. I've got all these resolutions that I want to make happen this year.
Can you share any with us?
I mean, one of they're really silly, and they're resolutions that everybody has. But one of them is I want to write a novel. I don't know anything about.
I don't think everybody has the resolution they want to write a novel.
Yeah, really? I feel like that's on everyone's at least bucket list. Where
what kind of novel?
That's the thing. I have no idea what the subject is. I have no idea what the genre is. It's just I really want to write a novel. Mm-hmm. And I signed up for this class. I can write TV, but writing a novel is completely different. So I signed up for this class to kind of, you know, get my feet wet.
Okay.
And I also want to, you know, swimming lessons is something I want to do. And and maybe learn another instrument. But anyway, I'm just trying.
Why, what instrument do you play?
Well, I play guitar. For a couple of years, I learned to play violin, but put a violin in my hand right now and I probably can't make it sound like anything. But I'd like the next thing I'd like to learn, to play piano.
If there was a guitar here, what would you play?
Oh, I'm sure it'd be something by the Stones.
Okay. Well, I just happen to have one here. No. and if you have a lot of downtime, is that a good thing for you or a bad thing for you?
It's a bad thing for me. I like to always be active. I like to have a sense of purpose. I like to have things I can check off of a list. If I'm just sitting around, then that's when the anxiety comes and you can get depressed and all that stuff. So it's good to have a reason to wake up in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like a prolonged period of downtime after a very prolonged period of not downtime.
Oh, well, sure. I mean, everybody needs a breather. You definitely need to, for sure, recover.
Okay. Well, David, thank you so much for coming through here. I think that you're a fascinating guy, and this was really fun to get to sit down and hear more about your experience.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's like such a, honestly, this was like part, this is like the little bow around my survivor experience. I've been such a fan of this podcast and to play the game, and now to be able to sit here with you and talk about it. It's like, wow, I've had the complete experience.
Well, you can come back anytime you want. Anything you want to talk about, you just let me know, and very happy to have you here. David, do you have a hashtag? You're a writer. You're a creative guy. I'm sure a hashtag is a drop in the bucket for you, baby.
Oh, God, I don't know. Hashtag bald weirdo. I don't know. I don't. That's the only one that comes to mind.
Wow. You could do t-shirts with that.
Yeah, why not?
Outside of, you know, how you think about yourself, is that something that you like, is that a phrase that you use to often describe yourself?
Well, it's certainly always in my head. I don't volunteer that to people often, but mm-hmm. But it's actually, honestly, going, having gone through this experience,
so you're embracing it.
I'm now embracing it much more. Because honestly, everybody saw what I am now. I can't hide it anymore.
Okay. All right. So you are on social media. You don't tweet a lot, though, right?
I don't. I really don't. I don't do a ton on social media. But yeah, I'm on Instagram and Twitter.
What's your handle?
Okay, so I've said this somewhere else, but I hate my handle so much because it sounds like egotistical. It's real, at real Dave Wright. That's for Instagram.
As opposed to the guy on the Mets?
That's what I mean. It's like, and I wish I put a real Dave Wright, because there are many actual functioning real Dave Wrights.
Okay. Here's what I want to know. This has been bothering me for a couple of days. Why are you the only member of the Millennials versus Gen X cast that doesn't have a verified Twitter? If anybody should be verified, why not you?
Yeah. It's, well,
the whole entire cast. I think Lucy is verified tomorrow. Everybody is ready to go.
Yeah.
Everybody's verified except you, of all people.
I know. You know what? It's partly A, I just haven't sat down to fill out the form, and B, part of me is worried that I'm going to send in the form and that they're going to for some reason say no, but it's on my list of things to do. I'm going to make that happen soon.
The resolution.
It is. It is.
Okay. All right. Paul and Rachel are going to be set up before you are. It's all happening. All right.
I'm dancing with Rachel soon, actually.
You're dancing with Rachel. What does that mean?
We're going to a dance class. She's going to teach me to dance. We've done it once before. And she's,
like, what kind of dancing?
It's like hip hop dancing. It's like, yeah, there's a DJ, and it's, yeah, I'm not good at it, but it's something I'm trying to
hip-hop
push myself.
Hip hop dancing.
Yeah. And I look weird doing it. And she actually shot some video, which no one will ever see, but I'm not going to let her do that this
gonna
next
leak
time.
Leak out.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I ask a question about your romantic life? What's going on there?
Well, you know, it's funny. I thought that, going on Survivor, that like, because I was basically not dating at all. And I thought, well, I go out on Survivor and like, just the women will just be throwing themselves at me. And
I've heard that story.
Yeah. It turns out nobody cares.
Yeah.
I've gone on some dates a little here and there, but for the most part, my life dating wise isn't all that different pre-Survivor than post.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe after this podcast gets out.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
You hope so. Okay. All right. So so you are actively looking.
Yes, I am, actually. It's another one of the things on the list.
On
girlfriend.
The list. But this is an extensive list of resolutions.
I know. I think, I don't know if there's enough time in the year to actually accomplish them all, to get verified.
It's not even a leap year. Yeah.
Girlfriend. I mean, my God.
It's a lot. The novel. It's all right. So, David, again, thank you so much. We've got a lot of other fun stuff coming up here on the podcast. If you are listening to this on Thursday, you will hear, or Friday, you will have be able to hear my Think Tank with Stephen Fishback, which we're recording on Wednesday night, of ideas for Survivor. Can you give us a pitch for Stephen to react to?
Oh my God.
You
oh
have
God.
An idea for the Survivor Think Tank?
Oh God. Oh God. Don't put me on the spot.
Okay,
like
you
that.
Can email me.
I'll email you one. Yeah.
And get us one for that show. That's coming up. And then I will also be sitting down very soon with Adam Klein. That's coming up around the corner. And also Brett LaBelle, we have scheduled as well for next week to talk to you on the podcast. So I'm excited about that. Plus everything going on with Celebrity Apprentice. You ever dabble in that?
I haven't.
Well, you're missing out. with the governor.
Oh, God.
With the governator. Yeah, so all that's coming up. And plus, the premiere of the new CBS hit reality series, Hunted, is around the corner. Are you going to watch that?
I think I will. I think it's actually even the same casting department that does Survivor.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. You might have that, you know, Survivor was one thing, David, but you might be too anxious for Hunted.
Yeah, no.
You don't need a bounty hunter chasing you around.
No, I'm on someone's car hood within an hour for sure.
Take that off the resolution list.
Yeah, that's gone.
To go do All-Star Hunted.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
Least dangerous game.
I love to get feedback on these long form interviews that we do on robisawebsite.com. You can subscribe to the podcast, robisawebsite.com/iTunes. And again, thanks so much to the patrons of Rob is a Podcast who make these really long form interviews possible. Thanks so much. Take care, everybody.